Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 21 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levesey, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. On today's show, Comic Timing is happy to have an interview with the creator of such fine works as Milk and Cheese and Dork, Evan Dorkin. We go from one side of his career to the next and everywhere in between, so plenty of fun is to be had. Also, a warning that there is some harsh language ahead, so please keep the fast forward button ready if you're listening to this one with the kiddies. Here now, Comic Timing.
Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levenstein, and welcome to episode 21 of Comic Timing. If you're wondering where episode 20 went, that'll be next week. It's a long story. If you listen to 19.5, you'll understand it. Before we get into the guest on today's episode, I want to introduce the usual, the man from the land of beer. He is Matt S.
How's it going there, Ian?
Doing pretty well, man. How are you?
So what exactly happened with that episode last week?
Well, everything ended up discombobulated. We were all out of sync and all that, so we're going to have to re-record that next week with Steve.
2 hours of my life down the toilet.
Yeah, I know. Well, you'll have to fish it out, man. I'm sorry.
All right. Anyway.
Yes, exactly. And we're joined today by a man who's done plenty of stuff in the world of comics and in the world of television. In television, he's worked on Space Ghost Coast to Coast. He's worked on the Welcome to Eltingville pilot for Adult Swim, Superman animated series, and so on and so forth. And in the world of comic books, Milk and Cheese, Dork, and so on, and Bill and Ted. And he is Evan Dorkin. Evan, what's going on?
What happened to episode 21?
This is episode 21.
What happened to episode 21?
We're still working on that.
2 hours of my life gone.
Oh, no. Well, hey, hopefully this will actually be a decent 2 hours spent, or less than that, depending on, you know, what actually happens here. But nevertheless,
I've
welcome to the show.
I've got 5 hours of answers, so.
Okay, good, good. Well, then we'll be perfectly safe in the world of that. So, let's start things off.
Episode 20?
Episode 20 was completely messed up, and we're going to redo that next
week.
Who
was it with?
With Steve Bryant of Athena Voltaire. Apparently, you've never heard
crickets.
Okay. Oh, you're actually starting to break up on the.
Oh, really?
On the phone here a little bit. I'm sorry to tell you.
Eep, that's not good. Well, hopefully that won't happen in the future. Are we sounding okay here now?
So far.
Okay, good. Hopefully it'll stay that way. If it does happen in the future, just let me know and we'll try and work that out. But anyway.
Yeah, there is a interruption and your voice keeps breaking up. But
that is really weird. Okay.
Yeah, crazy, man.
Well, if it does get like,
you know,
intolerable.
What?
What?
It's episode 20.
Oh, no.
Yes.
The spirit has been haunting us lately, it's for sure.
Yeah, well, like I said, next week it'll be as if that never happened because we're going back to episode 20, so.
Well, you shouldn't have mentioned it then.
Oh, no. All right, well, let's start at the beginning here, man, all right?
I think we did. All right.
Yeah.
You know, actually, you know what I think it is? I think it's the levelizer.
Oh, no.
Gonna get.
Yeah, and that would be the levelator, to tell you the truth,
levelator.
But whatever.
Levelizer sounds better.
Levelizer does sound better. I'm going to have to let those people know. But nevertheless, let's start at the beginning here, okay? So,
okay.
Now, from the world of Wikipedia here, let me see whether or not this is true or not.
Wikipedia is, if that's a world.
Source of pure factual information.
Exactly, because they're always right about this. It says here your first published art was in the letter pages of Rom the Space Knight. Is that true there? Or are they
first published comic art.
Okay, there we go.
I would say so. I mean, if you want to call it art. But no, I actually did some work on a book of sign language when I was a kid. I was in my early teens.
Oh,
so
interesting.
That would be my first published work, although I don't have a copy of it.
So what exact art was there drawn for the ROM letter page?
Excuse me, Matt? What? Oh, it was really scary for a second. I'm sorry, you actually unnerved me.
He's a very scary person, what can I say?
I did a fan drawing of a X-Men villain in a hospital bed.
Ah.
As a get-well... I think it was a get-well card to a character that the Hulk beat up.
Way too much time on our hands.
Hey, man, I was a kid. I was like 30.
Yeah.
You know, who do you want from us? That's back when comics had letters pages.
Hey, well, Marvel Comics had them again, at least, so.
Why?
Well, because now they can do with like the emails and stuff, and they want to call them real letters pages. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know it was going to be published, so you know, I actually found it pretty embarrassing because it was. It was supposed to be from the Hulk. That's why.
Okay.
So the lettering is actually very childish on purpose and misspelled. And then I find it. My friend Rob tells me, you know, you got a drawing in ROM. And I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. So I ran after school to the newsstand because that's where you bought comics still. And I picked it up and I was really excited. And I was absolutely devastated because I realized and everybody reading Marvel Comics was going to think I was even more illiterate than they were.
Oh, God.
For misspelling words in this thing. And it was colored. It was really strange. But they dropped my address out of it, so it's not like I got any mail on it or anything or expected to. But that was it. ROM 37, go out and get 10. It's a great, great book.
Well, if you can dig that out of the quarter bins or something like that, go ahead and find it.
I don't even know if they have quarter bins anymore.
Some cons, oddly enough. Like, I actually, over at Baltimore Comic Con, I found a pretty decent quarter bin, which had a whole bunch of stuff in there. But most of them are dollar bins these days, so
right.
Fine, go to the dollar bin.
I'm used to the dollar bin. That's all early 90s Valiant and Image books.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And Impact books from DC and New Universe books from Marvel.
And all those stuff that for Image Comics, you know, once upon a time were thousands and thousands of dollars, and then, you know, once the bottom dropped out in the 90s, that was it.
Yeah, I don't think it was worth thousands and thousands of dollars, but I know what you mean. Yeah.
Hey, my early Valiant collection was worth hundreds for about a month.
Yeah, I don't take this personally, Matt, but it really was a stock portfolio for morons. I mean, you know, I'm not because a lot of people really did believe that stuff was worth something.
Well, Wizard told me so. So
yeah, well, good.
Yeah,
for
when
you.
Does Wizard lie? Really?
often as Wikipedia. But
exactly.
I was working in a comic shop when. That was going on, and we had people coming in buying a case of books, and there's just no way something's worth it. When the store has a case, and these people have a case, and your grandmother reads about it in the newspaper and picks up five, you know, because Robin's dying, or Batman's got his back broken, or something ridiculous like that. It was a really bad time for comics.
Yeah, I don't even want to know what the hospital bills were like in DC Comics back then.
You can't let supply and demand get in the way of your dreams, my friend.
Can you explain that sentence?
I don't know if I can, but
what
basically...
What kind of thing did you just mean by that?
Yes, please,
everybody.
Matt,
what the hell did that mean? You can't let supply and demand get in the way of your dreams, my friend, is I believe that, what you said.
That is correct.
I can't...
Well,
dude, honestly, I want explanation.
That's what the 90s is all about. People buying comics that had millions of copies in their print runs, thinking they're going to be valuable someday.
Okay.
Which, obviously... did not come to be the case.
Yeah, except for like two, you know? Like, there's maybe two comics that might actually still be worth something. I don't know what they are, but I'm sure that they're probably out there.
A lot of people got rich out of that, you know? Rob Liefeld and Todd McFarlane.
True. Yeah. Well, Liefeld...
Did you ever see any store add new fixtures or go into a bigger store because of that?
Oh,
the
yeah.
90s?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't see any... You did?
Yeah, I did actually. There were a couple here in New York and in Brooklyn that actually did, and then the minute that the bubble dropped, they all went out of business.
Yeah, they collapsed.
Yeah.
What did you do with your Valiant and Image books? I just interviewed you two guys for 2 hours. It'd be much more interesting than anything I am.
They're sitting in a box in my parents' basement somewhere.
Well,
I don't know.
You know, winter is coming. Burn it to fuel.
Exactly.
Honestly.
High cost of heating oil this time of year.
That's true. Oh, exactly. I honestly would suggest it.
Hey, comics burn cleanly, so clean
all your essential,
right there.
All your essential inks as well.
Yeah, exactly. What sort of comics were you into when you were a kid, Evan?
First comics I remember reading were the newspaper comics, probably, like a lot of kids. I like Peanuts. I like almost everything that was a humor strip in the papers. I didn't really respond to the Steve Roper and Mike Noman. I didn't know what these idiots in suits were doing. I couldn't care less about Mary Worth or Dick Tracy. They were all in suits. It was no good. I like Tumbleweed, you know, anything that had misshapen people supposedly being funny or animals. I liked all that. I didn't like Little Orphan Annie. Anything that was people talking to each other and doing things was rotten. Anybody who was getting hit, like, hey, well, you know, that was good. Peanuts, I liked. I mean, anything with talking animals or Wizard of Id, BC. And then I read Tintin, reprinted in some kids' magazine my mother got me a subscription to. And then, you know, at some point I discovered Marvel Comics and became a moron. total moron for Marvel.
what were your favorite Marvel heroes?
Name them. You know, whatever was being printed in the 70s. Anybody who was in a costume I liked. I could tell you who I didn't like easier than I could tell you who I liked. I didn't like DC. I wasn't familiar with Charlton. I mean, the DC Comics just seemed like a bunch of PTA members sitting around in costumes talking about things. The right thing to do and how to do it. And, oh, no, that was horrible. And, oh, we'll have to fix that. It was just awful, you know. I just could not get into it. Never saw Charlton. Didn't like any horror comics or anything. You know, so I didn't like Dracula. I didn't like Son of Satan. He didn't have really, you know, to me that wasn't a superhero book. I didn't like Conan. And I didn't like anything like King Cole. Or, yeah, any Barbarian books, any of the monster books, even though I like monsters. I knew there was just something completely shoddy about Marvel's monster books. But, they'd cross them over with superheroes once in a while to try to, you know, jolt sales, and I still didn't buy into Dracula versus Spider-Man or any of that. It just seemed ridiculous to me. And I just read a bunch of that stuff in the Essentials, and they're just... they're really...
laughable?
Yeah, they're pretty awful.
Yeah, I tried to plod through that Essential of the Tomb of Dracula a few months back. It was little rough.
Those aren't so bad, but they just, you know... I heard such great things about them. I was kind of surprised how, you know, that I really could. And not surprised, but I just, they didn't do much for me. But I forced myself through for bathroom reading, extended bathroom reading, the Frankenstein book and the werewolf book, and they're just hilarious. They're just so much like bad 70s television in some ways, but, you know, with the added, you know, how bad comics were mostly and how bad comics can be. They're so pretentious, and the creative team flip-flops all the time, and everybody's trying to do these real deep, meaningful stories with, you know, the werewolf. What is he called? Werewolf by Night.
Werewolf by Night, yeah.
As opposed to, I don't know what other kind of werewolf is out there. And
werewolf by
mid-morning.
Yeah,
yeah, you guys can go with it. I'm staying clear away from that, Jed. And the Frankenstein Monster book is really funny, too, because they started off in the Mary Shelley original mode, and then they gets frozen and wakes up and ends up duking it out with superheroes and preventing the assassination of Nixon on a train with a female hobo.
It always killed me. It seemed like he was dressed like a hippie. He had like furry vest.
He had that rotten fur coat, hair shirt that they gave him pretty much in Son of Dracula, the third. Yeah, I think it's the third Frankenstein monster movie.
See, you're kind of making me want to see like them like go back to him now, and he's still wearing the exact same jacket years later.
Why wouldn't he be? I mean, you know, everybody wears the same. You know, he's wearing his copyrighted outfit, his Marvel copyrighted outfit. He can't get out of that thing. It's like the reason the Hulk always goes purple pants, no matter what he's wearing. If he was wearing a tuxedo, he'd end up hulking out the purple pants. You know, I'm sure there's a joke there somewhere, and Trent Hembeck's made it, but I won't get into it.
Oh God! Well, I mean, he
you don't know what I'm talking about, do you?
Vaguely.
Fred Hembeck.
Fred Hembeck was in the Marvel Age all the time. He was one of my favorite cartoons, actually.
True. He was in a Marvel book, so you got me. You've got me there. 1-0. What happened to episode 20?
Next week.
The Levelizer took care of it.
I liked all the Marvel guys, you know, Spider-Man, big Spider-Man fan, Captain America. I guess this is early, more like mid-70s on that I started, the comics were a quarter when I was buying them, so somebody can figure out when that was, 74, 75, I don't know. They were reprinting Kirby and Ditko at the same time that they were putting out all these other books, and Romita was doing a ton of covers, and Gil Kane was doing a ton of covers, and they'd also blow the deadlines a lot, and instead of having a fill-in artist, they'd have reprints of old comics, so I was able to get into the 60s stuff at the same time as the 70s.
I miss the days of quarter comics. God. Oh, my God. These days, with like $3.99 a piece.
How old are you?
Tell you the truth. He was a fetus.
You know, he wasn't even born.
I was a fetus, but no.
Answer the question.
I'm 22 years old. Thank you very much.
You know how you missed the days of quarter comics?
I wasn't born yet. Exactly.
Fucking years you missed the day. What are you talking about? I missed the days of a nickel hamburger.
That would be great, man.
Yeah, that would be great.
Well, look. Honestly.
Wouldn't that be great? And the fact. You can die in the Triangle Shirt Factory.
You know, your father could be a cop on the take getting beaten up in Hell's Kitchen and everything. Yeah, that would be great. Let's go back to the good
fact,
old days.
The fact that I missed out on it makes me disgusted, to tell you the truth, because these days...
You didn't necessarily miss out on anything.
Really?
I think that's
everybody's
the tenor of his comments.
Comics are pretty much from when they were growing up reading their comics as a kid, just like me. You know, I love the 80s. The 80s was shit. So you might love the 90s. The 90s were shit. It's all shit. It's all great. You know what I'm saying?
Unless
it's like some time of war, then that's just pretty shitty. Although you go see a movie like Hope and Glory, and the kids still had fun busting up the houses and saying up your arse and things like that.
Now, you just
it's a film. I'm sorry. I forgot you guys are 22.
I'm actually 35. So
yeah, there you go. Yeah, I am the youngster of the bunch.
Am I supposed to believe that?
Well. All I can tell you is the truth, man.
I vouch for him here. He is actually 35. I am 22.
Why is he running around with a 22-year-old?
The world of the internet.
Florida congressman or something?
Now, see, then I'd be going after the 14-year-old. So,
well, you might have known him for 6 years.
Oh, my God.
So did you, like, you started out in this...
I'm sorry, did I?
Just a little bit.
I mean, if you're legal now, I think it's a fine thing that you do with Matt. I think it's lovely.
Oh, man. Well, so did you follow? I mean, you said that you were working in a comic shop. Like, how old were you at the time when you were working there?
Oh, man, I don't remember. Hold on. I started working in a comic shop. I think I might have been, 18, when I started at a store called The Fantastic Store on Staten Island.
All right. So did that kill your... desire for books to work in the shop, or were you still a collector at that time?
No. I was collecting. I stopped reading comics at about the age of 15 or 16. I got really into the idea of becoming an animator. And this was before the animation boom, but still pretty hard. Actually, I guess there's probably more people who call themselves animators now, even with 2D falling apart and everything. There's so many people doing it on the internet. There's so many people doing small studio stuff in Flash. But there wasn't a hell of a lot of people doing animation in the late 70s, early 80s, mid 80s, you know? There wasn't, Disney was moribund, and you didn't have The Simpsons, Family Guy, you didn't have all that stuff on the air. So you didn't have the Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon, that's for sure. But I really loved animation, and I decided that's what I want to do, and I kind of just gave up on comics, not because of animation, I think comics ran its course for me. There was just Marvel and DC, and I was done. You know, it was just the same thing over and over, and I just got bored with it. I think a lot of people obviously drop comics, especially back then, because there's nothing to graduate onto if you get a little older or interested in anything else. And in art class, friends of mine gave me some comics, and I got hooked back on them. But for a while, I was out of them. So, yeah, I mean, I've never gotten sick of comics because of getting sick of comics fans or stores or the industry. I'd never, if that was the case, you know, I would have burned my collection ages ago. You know?
Man, so what comics actually brought you back into comics again?
Well, that was all the Marvel guys seemed to be over at DC, and two guys in my art class in high school were bringing their, had their comics with them and were updating me on what was in. They were trying to get me to, you know, they were, you should read some DC comics. I'm like, I can't read DC comics. they're boring, you know. I just don't care. And they told me, oh no, everybody from Marvel's over at DC, blah blah blah. So you know, they showed me some. I think it was New Teen Titans, and I really got into that because I liked George Perez's art when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And he was basically doing what he was doing at Marvel for DC, and it just read like a Marvel book to me with the DC characters. It was Wolfman and Perez.
Right.
And they had good, you know, it was what I liked from the old Spider-Man books and Fantastic Four, good soap opera that kept going from issue to issue with stories that kind of, were woven in and out, and they kept you hooked. You wanted to come back the next issue, and enough things got done in each issue that you felt like you got your money's worth, and it was exciting. And it seemed very much of the X-Men mold, which was my favorite book, I guess, the new X-Men when I stopped reading.
Right, and I remember at the time, I was, I don't know, 14 or 15, I think, when I started around that same time. And that was, you know, it was always the contest between the Teen Titans, the X-Men, which book was better, you know.
That's true. I mean, I remember fandom wasn't what it is now. I mean, you could go to conventions and your friends basically would talk about it and stuff, and there'd be zines, but I really wasn't aware. I wasn't aware of the zines. And it's not like now where everybody just goes on the internet and bitches for, you know, 12 hours about how they do everything. It's like, you know,
hey,
these are all people who can't color coordinate themselves. They're, you know, clean their clothes twice a week, and they want to tell everybody how to do their jobs for them. But, you know, God forbid you should tell anybody how to run their store or their life. But anyway.
You know, honestly, I want to disagree with you, but I really can't.
Yeah, what are you going to do? I mean, look, I was one of those fans, you know? I'm a walking car wreck, and I'm going to tell, you know, Marvel and DC how to run their books. I mean, you know, even if you have a valid point of view, it's not like I would do any better. But, you know, every time somebody bitches at me at a convention, I feel like I wish I could follow them home and see what kind of pieces of work they are. You know, it's like, it's not even just comics. You know, if you're on the post office line, there's always going to be two or three people, if the line's not going fast enough, who start bitching and moaning. And I would love to see what they do when they're at the dentist's office at their job or at the mechanics. They're just sitting on their asses like everyone else. So, you know.
Was your first comic? Or did you graduate into the indie boom comics of the 80s?
I went to comic school, and I graduated. And they give you a diploma and a pencil, and you start drawing Iron Fist.
That's the book. Wow, that's how John Byrne got started.
There you go.
But, as a reader.
I started on Wheelie and the Chopper Bunch for Charlton, actually.
That's
and
true.
And Lodge 2000.
But as a reader, I mean, did you...
Oh, I think we're even at 1-1 now.
Oh, okay.
I think we're back. I think I'm back in this game.
I mean, were you one of the people that got into indie comics, like a lot of other people at the time, from Love and Rockets? Or...
You know it, buddy.
Okay.
That's it. You're almost at 2-1 there.
But, he's getting there. He's getting there.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I worked in a store that was actually really good. It was a good store. The Fantastic Store was the precursor for Jim Hanley's Universe. Jim Hanley had his partner Dave Brucus split, and then Jim started his own store up. And during all that, Jim was always into, he got us to read like old comics and strip reprints. He would, you know, try to really open up our eyes to other kinds of comics besides just the superhero guys, or even older superheroes. But it was some of the first time, you know, that I took home strip reprints, and we'd all take home copies of the Buyer's Guide and the Comics Journal to take home, so that not only that we would open up our horizons on our comic, but also be able to sell them better to the customers. But I remember him pushing the Spirit on me and old strip reprints. And Love and Rockets was a book that he was really recommending that it took me a while to finally come around to, but when I did, I just fell for it really hard, like a lot of people at the time. It was a real breath of fresh air, and since I was into a lot of the music that, you know, one would think of, you know, the average Love and Rockets fan at the time, you know, punk and stuff like that, it was just really surprising for me to be able to see people doing comics where their own life was in it, their own interests. And, you know, there were genre elements. There were fist fights, and there were robots and dinosaurs and things like that. But that's not... It wasn't the focus, and it obviously was very different from what else was on the stands. It was much more, in some ways, like a little bit like a European comic, a little bit like a comic strip. And it just was, you know, a lot more freewheeling, and a lot more personality of the creators were in it. And, you know, then just a lot of things started coming out like that, from Fantagraphics and Kitchen Sink and other places.
Now, was it stuff like this that actually gave you the bug to want to start creating comics yourself, or was it something else?
Well, I always created my own comics, because I think, like a lot of people who were cut off from collaboration, you know, I didn't have an older brother, I didn't have any siblings, I didn't have any friends who wanted to do comics as a profession. I mean, I knew from an early age I wanted to do something, I wanted to draw. And I never really considered myself a writer, but I wrote all my own stuff because nobody was going to write comics for me to do. And I was never too interested. I drew pictures, but I was never crazy about actually just drawing illustrations and standalone drawings. I really liked doing comics. I always did. I liked something with a punchline or a story. You know what I mean? And I made terrible kids comics just like anybody else. But, you know, I just never realized that during the process of making these comics, I was writing, you know, I was writing them and pacing them and working on comics. You know, I just thought I was drawing at the time. And I made a ton of mistakes, some of which still have repercussions in my work these days. Unfortunately, I worked too small, and I thought everybody did everything to the original size, so that's why my work's very detail-oriented. I didn't know about doing corrections. I didn't know about layouts or anything like that. It was just pretty awful. I destroyed almost all of it. It's all gone. I wish I had some of it because my Fantastic Four comic was really pretty fucking bad from the memory I have of it, because I was such a bad artist that I instead of learning to draw things, I would just cheat. So, I mean, I've said this in an interview before, that, you know, I drew the Thing a lot because he's a monster and he was cool and he was fun to draw. So the Thing was always in the front talking to everybody. Whatever was happening, the Thing's in the front. Like, Human Torch is always on fire, even if he's, like, going to bed or eating a sandwich, he's on fire. I can't draw Johnny Storm. And Reed Richards, he's like an old man. I don't want to draw this guy, so I just want to draw the Thing. So Mr. Fantastic was always very, very small, you know, like half an inch in the background. And he'd have a giant hand or a fist right in the, you know, coming into the foreground. I'd always foreshadow his hands and his fist. So he'd be saying, you know, what's going on? But he'd be 80 feet away. So I wouldn't have to draw the old man. And Sue Storm was always a bunch of lines showing that she was invisible because I couldn't draw women. So you had the Thing, the Human Torch always on fire, a very small Mr. Fantastic, and an always invisible girl. So even if they went to the movies, most of them would not be there because I'd cheat.
Sounds like a party.
I think I worked like that up until about 2003. That's how my comics were done.
Oh, that explains it.
Yeah, very good. Nice try. Getting relaxed.
Oh, yeah. Man.
But if you look at my early comics, there's almost no feet. You know, I still can't draw feet, but at least I can draw an approximation of feet. There are no full figures because I was just too... I mean, it didn't help that everybody was yelling at each other with 50 lines of dialogue, so there was no room to put their feet in anyway. But now I try to draw feet on any occasion I can to at least try to balance the pages out better.
Well, you and a lot of artists, actually. I mean, the anatomy is one of the hardest parts about being an artist in the first place.
I can't draw anatomy. That's why I draw milk and cheese, a carton, and a wedge of cheese. There's no anatomy. Nobody can tell me the anatomy's off on that. That rectangle's...
Exactly.
Gotcha. No good. You know. I mean, the cheese is wrong. Actually, the anatomy of the cheese is wrong, because he's a cheddar, but he looks like a Swiss, so I'm fucked there, too. I can't even draw a cheese right.
Oh, man.
I just had to do turnarounds for the vinyl figures we're making of the characters my publisher's making, and I didn't even know what the hell they looked like from the side, practically, because I realized that Cheese's face is at the same angle as Milk, but a wedge would be at a 45-degree angle, I guess, or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
So you'd be looking up his nose like a Gil Kane drawing all the time. So I had to figure that out. And so, yes, I can't even do the anatomy of a goddamn wedge of cheese with eyebrows.
Congratulations, sir. Congratulations.
Well, you both have 10 points to my one now.
Oh, man.
I'm never going to catch up. This sucks.
You'll get there eventually. By the time the interview's over, you might get there.
Right, I'll still be on the phone until 6 in the morning trying to get points on you guys. Right. Great.
Oh, beautiful.
I'm trying to do a job right now while I talk to you, and I just realized that I can't even do... Oh, this is... The paper I'm using is too thick, and I can't use this white box image. Oh, shit. Anyway, let's talk.
Okay, cool. That works for me.
The Human Torch, always on fire.
Yes, exactly. Were there any artists along the way that gave you any assistance in getting into the business?
I love that Picasso boy.
Yeah, there
Guernica,
you go.
Guernica informs all my comics. Everything ends with everyone dead. I thought that was somewhat funny. It was erudite. I've been using erudite for the last week since I said it last week in an interview. Well, anyway. Well, I liked all the Marvel guys from the 70s pretty much, you know. Pretty straightforward. Kirby. Ditko. I love Kirby. Buscema, John Buscema. I like Sal Buscema a lot. I get into arguments with people in the industry, and you know, but Sal, I thought, did his job, and he seemed to enjoy. I actually like Sal more than John in a lot of ways. John's a better artist and tells a better story, but I think Sal, you can tell Sal likes what he's doing more. I think John was, and he admitted it in interviews, and he would tell you at conventions when I was a kid, it was shocking to hear a guy go, I don't like Iron Man, I don't like Captain America, right? I like Conan. And Conan, to me, was the worst.
Yeah.
Half-naked idiot with an axe. Who gives a shit? You know, who gives... I can't get into the problems of a half-naked guy with an axe. Oh, you know, he won another fight and got laid. He had no self-doubt. I like Spider-Man, you know? I liked all the neurotic idiots. The Thing, Spider-Man, Hawkeye can't get laid. He can't get a break. He keeps quitting. He comes back.
Yeah, been killed a few times lately, too.
Who gives a shit? Those characters have been dead to me for a long time. Marvel and DC, really. I mean, jeez. You know.
So you're not following all the big events here this last year?
I'd only follow that with a shovel.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Nothing against. I mean, I like working on those books. Fine. I'm sure there's books out there I'd probably still like if I could. I hear that Agent of Atlas thing is pretty cool. People tell me I'd probably like it. I just, you know, it's not Marvel. It's not even Marvel DC. Maybe it's me. I'm willing to take the blame. Maybe it's me and many like me. Or maybe it is them, but I can't. The continuity and the gimmicks and the. It's just fan fiction to me. It's just crazy. Well, D&D module.
I mean, do you think that, I mean, were superhero comics designed for 45-year-old men to be reading them?
They weren't. They are now.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Now they are.
I don't think necessarily that they can't be. I don't argue with the idea. I argue with the execution. Sometimes I almost feel prudish about the way they're treating these characters. These are characters that I cared very much about as a kid. And they can do whatever they want with them. It's not my, I don't own them. And when they're gone, when the current regimes at both companies are gone, new people will come in with their own prejudices and their own desires to see X character raised and X character killed 20 times. And they won't like humor books, or they will like humor books, or whatever dumb fan shit they bring to it. But the fact is, I don't think there's ever been a case of children's characters ever turned into such a bunch of violent assholes.
Yeah, and that is true.
My characters are all violent assholes. I don't mind comics about violent assholes, but I just really believe in, you know, to me, in my heart and in my head, the way to go is to create things like Watchmen or The Authority or Planetary or what have you. Good or bad, it's not the point. The point is you take these characters, they're iconic, they're obviously templated on the Marvel and DC characters. Everyone knows who's a substitute for Superman or Captain America or Spider-Man. And then let them rape each other and kill each other and pull each other's arms and heads off. Everybody will get it. To watch these characters act like they're in some snuff film just doesn't work for me. It just doesn't work for me. Do I, you know, Dick Tracy doesn't act like Scarface all of a sudden to boost sales. You know, Mickey Mouse doesn't start, you know, I don't even know what the hell. You know, I get the bits and pieces on the internet and I look at a couple of books on the shelves and I saw Superboy ripping some guy's arms off, and I just thought, this
yeah,
is ridiculous.
That was what Infinite Crisis was all about, I think, killing people as graphically as possible.
But
it obviously sells better than the average stuff. Whenever they try, and they go, look what works. This is what retailers jump on. This is what the fans jump on. This is what the newspapers jump on. And everything that's popular right now seems to be about the darkest, grimmest, nastiest stuff. I think it's laws of diminishing returns. I think where are they going to go? They have just, since Dark Knight and Killing Joke, they've ramped up the violence, they've ramped up the sex, you know. It's still just as juvenile and stupid as always, if not stupider, because all they do is open up Pandora's boxes of plot insanity and paint themselves into corners that they have to create another 12-issue, 52-issue explanation. It's absolutely insane. It's clinical insanity, but it sells to a certain enough of people, to enough of a degree, and makes enough people rich that, what can I argue against it? I don't know. You know, you could say that basically mass acceptance of these characters in comics form died in the 70s, so anything they do to juice them is good for the characters. I don't know if it's good for Marvel and DC, but as long as they're making movies in underwear and you know, that's what they've always been about. There's no bones about it. I mean, back in the supposedly uncynical days that people seem to forget were cynical of the 30s and up, they were made to sell shit. And that's fine, but I just think that, you know, this dance between whether it's kids' entertainment with the animation and the toys, and whether it's adult entertainment with the practically mature readers-only books that they're pumping out, I do think it's a bunch of 45-year-old guys jerking off themselves, but
how do you get the kids back involved, though? I mean, obviously, these 45-year-olds are gonna, you know, eventually not be 45 anymore. They're gonna be 90, and they're not gonna be buying comics anymore. You know, I mean,
yes, they will be. You know why?
Why?
You know how they get the kids reading it? It's called manga.
Yeah.
It's called everything that Marvel and DC is not doing. So Marvel and DC can have the direct market to itself and squeeze out us poor schlubs. And those who don't want to do Marvel and DC stuff. You got to understand, as angry as I might sound over this stuff, it's because I sound angry when I order anything, you know, in a diner. That's just me. I don't really give a shit anymore. I gave up a long time ago. I just learned to go with it. It is what it is. It's no skin off. I mean, I can't get Eltingville over it. it's all done. I still have comics to read. You know, I like this. I like the essentials, and I like the
showcases and the essentials. Pretty much all I'm reading these days.
And I'm sure that they were good. Law of averages. There still has to be some good comics coming out of those companies. I just don't personally like the way they're treating the superheroes these days. And and obviously it's tough because people all say that they want to have some retro stuff. They want to have something that is more lighthearted. And then something like Dan Slott's thing comes out, which people seem to really love, and the She-Hulk, and it dies on the vine. But what are you going to do? They are in business. They got to give the people what they want, or at least what they feel that they want to stay in business. And I just don't understand, how you're supposed. Yeah, I don't know how this is supposed to grow their market. But maybe they don't give a shit because in 10 years they could all be gone. Who stays at Marvel for 10 years in the executive positions or 20 years?
Good point.
You have Paul Trumpenberg playing with his action figures over at DC, and what else? I don't know. So they'll be gone, but if things get worse, it's just like the people who run the government anywhere. They're gone. They don't care. They got paid. They're gone. So in 10 years, if comics drop even further, everybody can say, "Remember, comics sold better in the '90s and the aughts, or whatever."
The oddies,
People getting more money for doing comics now than they did when they sold better. The creators are paid better to sell 30,000 of a lot of things than they are. Than they were to sell 2 million. So, who's to argue? The industry.
That's why they're $4.
Well, that's not my problem. I don't buy them.
So what? I mean, aside from that kind of stuff, are there any comics out there that you are buying right now?
From the main.
No, from anybody.
From anybody.
I was reading on your blog post.
It's harder and harder because the thing is, you're buying books and collections. I'm buying books and collections more than I'm buying the monthlies or the single issues. I mean, I buy Love and Rockets. I buy Hellboy when it comes out. But I think, from what I understand, Mignola stopped drawing it. And I still like his writing, but there's just something a little,
Right, the last series that came out, was it Makona or something like that?
Well, those I'm waiting for to get in collections, to be quite honest, because I just can't even keep on top of these things. But mostly I buy stuff based on the creator. I guess what it's saying is I buy stuff by the Hernandez brothers, and I buy stuff by Mike Mignola. I buy stuff by Chris Ware, Dan Klaus, Joe Sacco. I try to keep up with what Paul Grist is doing. I mean, he does superheroes, I like that stuff. But I like Jack Staff. I'm just behind on it. I like Roger Langridge. I like, why am I blanking? Do I have to turn around and look at my comics? I guess I do.
We can edit it all together to make you sound all smooth.
A lot of Charles Burns, David B., I'm buying a lot of the the reprints and stuff. My favorite stuff lately has been things like Walton Skeezix and Peanuts and Dennis.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that because I saw that on one of your blog posts that you got the new volume and then you were probably not going to be posting for a while. So that
well, that was because I was working. I was finishing Dork Number 11 up.
All right. Well, I just I'm really enjoying those old time cartoon strips as well. So
it's not like I ran off with Walton Skeezix and started spanking my monkey.
Oh well, I certainly hope not.
It was only for an hour.
Okay.
No, it's a fun book, and I'm really enjoying the fact that right now we're in kind of a golden age of these old strip reprints. And I'm really looking forward to those Popeye reprints coming out.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I have almost all the. I have all but one of the old Fantagraphics one. I'm really.
Yeah, so do I.
I forgot how grainy those were. And I love them. They're just, to me, that's great superhero comics. I mean, I'm really enjoying the old strips, maybe because I really miss superhero comics in some ways, in that I miss I'm missing the goddamned word that I'm trying to look for here. Edit this fucking thing out.
I shall.
No,
man, don't worry.
When something is, the serial nature of old comics.
There you go.
Okay.
I really miss that, and it's not in the papers because the way the strips are in the papers now, if you're waiting for Little Orphan Annie or Dick Tracy or the Phantom or whoever the hell is still around, it takes them 4 days to get across the street. Because the first panel tells you that they're getting in the street from yesterday, and then the second one they say, "Hey, look, here's the street," and the third one they go, "We're almost at the end of the street." And the next day it's the same damn thing practically. There's the end of the street. Here's the curb. We're going to the curb. It's horrible, the state of strips. And being able to get a huge chunk of something like Walton Skezik's is just terrific. Popeye is an epic of terrific and moronic proportions. But I mean, some of those stories of Sea Hag and some of those battles are like the best fights in comics, if you just want to look at them from the point of view of superheroic fisticuffs. Popeye getting shot like 30 times and he still keeps going and beating the hell out of people is just hilarious. You know, he's like a great superhero style character in that regard. But it's actually a really beautifully, it's a funny strip, it's a romantic strip, it's a mysterious strip. I mean, like Dick Tracy's coming out from, I think, IDW, is that the name
right.
of the company? I'm looking forward to that because I've read very little Dick Tracy, and that's a bizarre strip. I mean, the characters are all just nightmares walking around in 3-piece suits. And you've got this guy with a knife for a nose, you know, running after all of them and shooting them down. I wish that I had a kajillion dollars. I would immediately set upon to put out money-losing strip collections. I'd get people, you know, I'd hire people who were great at designing books to do them, and I would happily lose my shirt, you know, within a certain amount of years. I'd put a bunch of money away somewhere in a bank, I guess, or something, or some adult thing like, you know, some investment. I don't know how to do any of that.
Well, you mentioned the superhero aspect, and that you're sort of missing a little bit of that. I mean, could you see yourself maybe working on a superhero project in the future, either, you know,
no,
for
I don't
one
think
of the
anybody at DC or Marvel is looking for my take on anything,
or independent even. I mean, what about like creating your own work or something?
Well, I'm hoping to finally finish my kids' superhero stuff. I mean, it's all ages, but you know, if you say all ages, people start vomiting openly in the comic shops. All ages to them is like anathema, you know. Everybody, how are they going to, you know, they're all yelling, how are we going to get the kids back into the stores? Then you tell them, oh, well, I've got an all ages superhero comic. Who wants that shit? Well, I've got some manga. Fuck manga. I want them to read Green Lantern. You know, you can't win in the direct market, you know. There's maybe a couple of hundred retailers out there who knows what's going on, and the rest of them are all just walking around with their shoes off, rolling dice, and wondering why no women walk into the store. I literally walk into a store and there's a guy with walking around in his bare feet, the owner, in the store. I just, you know, slob, this isn't a fucking living room. I mean, I guess it is. That's the problem. It's a lot of guys' living rooms with a cash register or a cigar box with money in it. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, it was just a poorly stocked hangout, I guess, for him and his game-playing friends. I'm like, why pay fucking rent in a strip mall? Go back to your parents' basement and do this. But I guess you get to say that you're part of the comics industry if you run a store.
Oh, I guess.
So it was in Pennsylvania somewhere. It was depressing. It was just, you know, I forgot what these joints are like. I'd rather walk into a place and see people knifing their sisters while, you know, raping their mothers and women eating entrails and dogs running around and people smoking dope and opium and showing stag films. I mean,
I think they have one of those in Brooklyn
now. That
would
be healthier than most comic stores. Christ. It's like some Clay Wilson nightmare going on in there. I thought, this is pretty good. This is okay. Do you have Walton Skezik, sir? I'd be much happier than just one barrel-shaped human being walking around like an episode of Hee-Haw.
Oh, man. So speaking of, you brought this up a little while back, but speaking of manga, I'm a big manga fan. I know Ian's a big manga fan, and I for some reason I have this impression that you and Sarah were kind of into the whole manga thing quite a while ago as well.
We were into manga before manga was cool.
Right. Ooh. Me too,
like,
man.
We were into manga like in the 50s, man.
Exactly.
When it was just a few clubs.
Astro Boy. There you go.
No, I mean, I think that it's just a matter of, yeah, who cares when we were into it? I mean,
no, that's not my main point, but basically just,
get to it.
Is because, like you said, I mean, obviously that's where kids are going these days. I mean, why do you think that? Why are kids gravitating towards that stuff?
I think a lot of it is just cultural infusion. I think the Japanese culture just slowly leaked into American culture over the years through television and video games. And you know, I mean, growing up, I mean, you're closer to my age than that pipsqueak over there in Brooklyn.
Yep.
And you know, you had between, you know, I've lived in New York my whole life, so you had pretty good saturation of television, a lot of good independent stations, and a lot of weird stuff getting shown. So you had Gigantor and Kimba the Lion, which was based on the Tezuka, Jungle Emperor Leo, I think.
Right.
And which I didn't know at the time, obviously. Astro Boy was on the air. If you could get a UHF channel in, you could get Tobor the Eighth Man and things like that. I couldn't, but I knew what it was because I, you know, if you read Fangoria and Starlog, some, you know, famous monsters, every once in a while they'd show you images of this stuff. I loved Godzilla movies, and I watched the Fuller 30 movie, which showed all the giant rubber suit stuff, and late at night on Channel 9 and Channel 11 had a lot of the rubber suited Toho and Daiei films, and King Kong Escapes and all that garbage. See, you know, I just like that stuff. Speed Racer, that was a big one that everybody kind of knew in this area, at least. And growing up, anything that looked like Japanese animation, in the 80s, we get what came out? Battle of the Planets.
Right.
And yeah. Star...
Star Blazers.
Star Blazers, which I forget what the real show is. Yamato.
Yamato, yeah.
Is that the Yamato? Right. And Gatchaman, yeah. Which has a great theme song. But that stuff was like even crazier. Everybody was shooting at each other. You know, it was wild. And it just felt like, you know, and so when Sarah grew up, she had TBS, and they showed Space Giants and Johnny Sacco and things like that, I think. And I never saw any of that stuff until I was older. But, I was a sucker for giant... I mean, the Japanese really liked things that comic book people liked. If you were a kid into comic books, you know, giant monsters, giant robots...
And usually with little kids controlling them, too.
I didn't even get to see Kamen Rider or Ultraman or any of that stuff. Some people did see it. I mean, they did have some packages of, like, Ultra 7 was dubbed in Canada and showed in a few places. So I never saw any of the, I don't know what the Sentai shows or the Tokusatsu? I don't know if I'm saying that right. The team shows or the superhero shows, which I would have loved. Because I love them now. They're ridiculous, you know? A guy with a tiger head on a motorcycle fighting monsters. That's okay for me. That's really all I need. The sense of wonder/idiocy is great. Ultraman and, the Go Rangers, you know, which set the tone for, you know, there's a chick, there's two hot guys, one weird guy and one fat guy.
Oh, yeah. Every single manga and every single anime is bound to have at least
one of those. And a lot of that seems to come from Go Rangers, which has that group. And the fact I literally will stop in the middle. He will go, if he sees a bowl of rice that a monster sets out for him, he stops and eats it and gets conked on the head in one episode. You know, that was fine by me. And like I think like a lot of people who were into this junk, you took it where you could find it. You watched it. I remember there was the Dynaman. They would redub the Dynaman stuff on Night Flight, on USA's Night Flight in the 80s, I think it was. So you got music videos and dirty-minded, jokey, mystery science theater kind of Japanese superhero shows. So, you know, I'm a junk culture goof my whole life, and I picked up on this stuff. And I worked, like I said, I work in a comic shop that ordered from all the companies. So we saw clips in first manga series, and we saw... manga. So I was able to, you know, I read some of the manga that was coming out in the 80s. My The Psychic Girl, I remember, and I'm not sure what else. I never really got into any of that.
Let's see, what's the first, or Eclipse
Seed
and First.
Was coming out.
Yeah, like Area 88.
Area 88. I never got into any of the mecha kind of stuff, to be honest. I never got too crazy about that. I mean, it was too formulaic even for me. And I think I never got into the idea of somebody basically being a giant Iron Man and, you know, being kicked to them. I kind of liked heroes that sort of had their powers innate. I mean, I know this sounds super geeky, but it is what it is. And the idea of all these people strapping themselves into these big robots and running out there, I kind of liked the robots more than the people, and I wanted the robots to be sentient, if that makes sense. It always bothered me that, like in Giganto, that Giganto couldn't just kind of wake up one morning and go beat the crap out of people, that he needed the stupid little kid to play with the box.
Yeah.
The kid's stupid. He can't be used doing this.
Gundams just sort of sit there waiting
one
to be used.
One joystick was going to work this robot as intricately as that. I just never bought it. It bugged me. I wanted the robot to be independent. And that's you know, just my anal... fan thing at the time. Now I could care less, but at the time, you know, I didn't want Johnny Sacco, I just wanted the giant robot. If that makes sense.
That makes sense.
And if it does, I'm very sorry to you guys.
Apology accepted.
Well, you know, you're going to start talking about my geeky kid days, you know, you get me going.
Yeah.
As opposed to when I just talk a lot about other crap.
Because I remember, I was kind of trying to be a fan at that same time, and the stuff was pretty hard to come by.
Fan?
Well, I was trying to get into it. It was very hard.
You went to comics school like I did, and then you worked on Iron Fist.
I was close. I mean, as far as what was available at the time, I mean, my big show that I grew up with was watching Robotech, which was...
Yeah, see, I'm a little... you're younger than I am, and I missed out. I was aware of it, but by that time I was probably hanging out late at night, you know, trying to...
Yeah, with girls and... Beer
yeah, it
and
didn't,
stuff.
It didn't work, so I probably should have just watched Robotech.
Yeah. And, because I'm younger, I grew up on Transformers and Thundercats, pretty much. But that was later on.
Well, Thundercats and Transformers were around when I was a kid. I mean, you know, I understand the appeal to certain young men of Chitara. I can remember well enough that the opening was animated really well, and the rest of the show looked like crap.
Oh yeah,
they spent like $50 on the opening and $5 on the rest of the show. I just
like every other show in the 80s.
All those shows, yeah, because I'd watch a lot of them because I was still into animation, and I'd be like, wow, if the rest of the show looked like this, it'd be wonderful. And I could tell it. You could tell that Asians designed those shows. You know, you were starting to see, and again, that's where you're starting to see some influence. From anime and whatnot, you know, you could tell if you were paying attention. Even you know, if you were a young geek like me, you'd be looking at the credits for these shows and see a lot of Asian names.
Yeah,
and right. Studios. I mean,
during the 80s, a lot of that stuff was coming out of Japan. I mean, and then it got to the point where it was too expensive for us to do that anymore.
Well, the Elfingville was animated in I think Japan and Korea.
Ah.
You know, which is why it was another reason why it failed, I think. Because
man, you know, I still have not been able to ever find a copy of that anywhere.
I watched it when it aired on Adult Swim the first couple times, and you know, about Eltingville, actually. I mean, how much of that is based on, you know, like your own experiences?
Well, you've heard me talk about this stuff, so
yes.
So I have to, you know, Chitara, you know, Cobra Commander. I didn't even watch G.I. Joe. But I know this crap. I didn't want, you know, I didn't, stuff I don't even know about. Lin-Min-May, right?
Right.
Right. I never watched that show. I never watched an episode of Robotech, but I know who that damn Lin-Min-May is. I'm an idiot. Like, you know, Eltingville is, you know, I've always said Eltingville is it's a love note. No, it's a pipe bomb. I love this stuff. I hate this stuff. I like the fans. I hate the fans. I guess I like certain, you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, you like certain aspects, but not others. Not others, is that, and, which
you know,
is pretty much, yeah.
Isn't that the way of the world?
Didn't
we just stumble upon a truth?
Uh-huh.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I don't think we need to, I think we could all go throw ourselves off a roof right now.
We go, right now, the little NBC, the more you know thing is going across the sky.
You guys go first. Well, and bringing us back full circle, knowing is half the battle.
There you go.
G.I. Joe.
Exactly.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Back in the good old days when cartoons used to have to teach moral lessons.
Yeah.
That's one great thing about the Cartoon Network. When we did Eltingville, they actually said in the pitch, they basically said, no lessons, no morals, no happy endings necessary. I was like, God bless you guys. This is
there
great.
You go.
Yeah, we're working on the Bible for another show for the Adult Swim that I probably should have gotten done 80 years ago. And, you know, one nice thing about redoing the Bible is realizing that I don't have to come up with the usual horse shit that everybody makes you do in a cartoon or any kind of pitch, which is like, what are these characters' goals? What are they striving towards? You know, maybe they're just trying to fucking entertain people for 15 minutes and be funny. What do you mean? Who needs that shit?
There you go.
Just like art crit stuff. You make it up just to pass the course. And I hate when they try to make you go, well, what is the plot? What is the you know, what is the path for this character? Well, he's trying to, you know, like, do you think, like, when they worked on Monty Python or The Odd Couple or any, you know, whatever success, you know what I mean? Did they really sit there and go, well, let's see, you know, Felix, no, he's a slob and this one's not a slob.
Yes, but how does he really feel?
You need a fucking show. Well, that was based on a movie and a play, so I guess that's a terrible example. But, you know, I never understood that. I mean, you know, and nowadays anybody knows how you know, it seems that like 10-year-olds know how to do pitches for Hollywood. It's ridiculous, and know how to know the whole procedure. But it really is ridiculous because everybody seems to think this stuff's horseshit. They laugh at it when The Simpsons and something like South Park make fun of it, but then they do it anyway. They're like, yeah, this is all horseshit. Hollywood's horseshit. They make you do horseshit, but you know, we're going to make everybody do horseshit. It's like a fraternity. I had to have my ass spanked, and I had to be thrown in the back of a trunk and drink a fifth. drink a bottle of vodka. And that's a really horrible thing to make somebody do, so I'm going to make some little asshole pledge to it, too, to get revenge.
Man, so is this...
I really think that's what these things are. Like, they just, like, I had to go through it, now you have to go through it.
Is this a new Bible that you're working on? Can you talk about what this is, or is it still
hush-hush?
Yes, hush-hush?
I can. Yes, I can. Do you want to know the character growth chart path?
Well, actually, no. Just basic plot.
I want to know his motivation. I want to know everybody's motivation.
It was a job. Yeah, what's my motivation? I'd like a job. That's my motivation. I want to make a show what is funny and have it go for more than one episode before.
That works.
Not for me. Not so far. Not so far. My one shot was a failure, but I never expected to get a shot, so... That was a success in and of itself. And that's me being positive, and that's one to grow on.
Well, that's few and far between, I think, when we see
I'm not going to answer your question about the pilot right now. Let's talk about comics.
Okay, cool.
Ah, okay.
What?
Well, okay, everybody loves comics, but they always want to talk about the stuff you don't do well. You do outside of comics.
Of course,
right. They trample Will Eisner to get to some guy who played a droid.
Well, let's...
They say nobody respects comics. Who is this day I'm talking about?
Well, let's talk some of your early works and then
go.
You do that.
You guys talk about my early work, and I'll just listen on, and once in a while I'll interject with whether you're right or wrong.
There you go. All right, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey for Marvel Comics back in '91. I mean, obviously,
Yeah. That was the year Punk broke.
Hell yeah! What was it like working on?
He wasn't born yet, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Come on, 84, man. By then, I knew what was going on. All right,
You guys are having it out.
Cool. Every episode, right here, exactly. Yeah, but what was it like working with already?
And then you just make this episode 20 and 21.
That works. No,
a two-part extravaganza. There you go.
Fantastic.
Anybody who listens to it gets a no prize.
Oh, no,
they get it. They get it.
You know, they actually brought the no prizes back now, and they're doing those through the internet.
They're going to blow all their profits mailing those suckers out.
Yeah, they're doing it through email now, apparently. Like, they're like email attachments.
Great.
It's ridiculous.
How useless is that? Even an empty envelope is better than...
It's better than that. At least you got the Hulk drawing on it. My friend Michael Krugman got a no prize. I think he wrote it and said, "This is stupid." That's all he wrote. And they said, "You're right. There you go. No prize." This makes
Fantastic.
No sense. Stan can't possibly be writing all of these on his own. You're right. And they sent him this Hulk envelope. He calls me over. He goes, "You got to look at this." I come over. He goes, "I didn't know there was." I ripped it open. I was so excited. The envelope surprised, and I destroyed it. I said, "You idiot!" I didn't say you fucking idiot. I don't think I had learned that word yet. I don't think I reached level 3 of cursing. I didn't have enough experience cursing to reach level 3.
But now you're on about level 8, so it's all good.
Actually, I think that I'm on a pretty good level there. I think I could go on the internet and sell some of these levels off some serious money on Warcraft or whatever the fuck that is.
Sell on eBay.
Geekcraft.
I'm
getting married on the internet. Yeah, whatever.
All right, yay.
To a dragon lady. Yeah. And frog princess fucking thing. Well, I must admit, if I a friend of mine was showing me City of Heroes. I was at a friend. We were visiting a friend in Atlanta, and he works with computers. And he was showing me City of Heroes, and I just said, "Jesus! I mean, I might make fun of this, but if I started playing this, I would just degenerate like the characters in the Elting Girl story about."
That's the whole reason why I don't play the game, because I know that like the minute I start playing it, I get addicted.
I'd put a catheter in me, I'd wear adult Depends, and I would just shit my pants for 6 weeks and eat whatever came near me, and I would just lose my wife, my baby, my whatever work I have left, my friends, and I would just be smacking the bits out of people on the internet. I'm sure of it. I'm sure that is like smack. So it's a good thing that I am staying away from it, and I'm computer illiterate for the most part. Because I would be designing, you know, these are probably the future comics writers. I'm not saying that for good or bad. The people working on playing City Heroes right now are all like the guys who are rolling dice from my day, working out their ability to tell a story and work with characters and stuff. I mean, it's a good training ground. It's just that at some point I think you have to realize that you're also doing it as a... You sort of got to work towards the fans and not just, you know... You got to make yourself happy when you're working on the mainstream stuff, but I think you also have to kind of be respectful.
Yeah.
Which might be a word that people don't expect me to say, who know my work. But I really do think you have to be respectful of the characters and the audience. I don't think you have to be over-respectful. And I think you should, again, like, you should enjoy yourself and write for yourself and get something out of it. But I really do think that you are a, you know, you're, they say, they give lip service to this. They talk about how they're they're sort of like the caretakers of the characters. But if you were the caretakers of, like, children and you treated them like that, you'd be arrested. You know, people would come home and their kids would be, you know, their diapers would be full of shit. There'd be blood all over them. They'd be missing limbs. They'd be having sex with one another, doing drugs, killing, mind controlling each other. That to me is not caretaking. You know,
sounds like an issue of Garth Ennis's The Boys, right there. So,
well, you know,
well, sounds like an issue of 52.
Superheroes are easy to piss on. I mean, they're really an easy target. It's kind of like Wiccans and Renaissance fair people. It's very hard not to make a good joke out of it.
Well, with Marvel Comics, you didn't exactly do superheroes. You did Bill and Ted. And
I did Fight Man. I did, I mean, it was a joke, but I did Agent X. I did a Thing series. People might think that they're all not serious, you know. Well, I tried, you know. I like superheroes. I really did. I'm not ashamed to say that completely. I'm not apologizing totally. But I like superheroes. I have superhero books in my collection. I enjoy, like I was saying, I do. I have the superheroes that I'm doing for my own stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just, I like, you know, the idea of superheroes doing super heroics. And, you know, not being watered down, but not being just god-awful.
Not being evil, rotten bastards, basically.
Yeah.
That's what the villains are supposed to be like. I mean, you have a Punisher, you know, I always thought the Punisher was ridiculous anyway because a guy whose powers are his guns, I just don't give a shit about. I mean, there's plenty of fiction about a guy with guns. You know, obviously you can tell some good story about a guy with guns running around or whatever, but he always had to not kill anybody. He was a eunuch in the you know, when he was originally created. He couldn't do anything with those guns. And Wolverine, you know, he's a killer, he's not a killer, he's a killer, he's not a killer, he's cool, so we gotta keep him, sells a lot of shit, so I mean, I just you know, it's like I just can't get into this stuff. I can get into plenty of mayhem, and plenty of gore, plenty of violence, plenty of tits and ass, plenty of, you know, I've got no problem with pornography in and of itself. I just don't need that in my, you know, Superboy and Legion of Heroes comics. You know, let's play kissing games 30 years later. You know, let's all fuck each other up the ass.
Oh, God.
Okay, you know, I can't get into a comic book world where the formerly comedic, stupid villain Dr. Light rapes the stretching guy's happy wife. And then kills her while she's pregnant with the stretchy guy's baby.
It's beautiful.
The stretchy guy got his powers from drinking, like, stretchy soda.
Fruit soda. I read that. I got that Elongated Man.
And this is what
essential
we're
book.
This is what we're going to build a world of supposedly adult realistic stories on.
It's fantastic. It's absolutely just fantastic.
It's just, yeah, it's a bunch of shit piled on a bunch of sugar.
Oh, man.
Well, like I said, that's kind of the problem is that I don't think comics, superheroes, we all love superheroes because we grew up reading them. But, you know, I don't think ever in history had people kept reading them for such a long time.
Well, it's like rock and roll, I guess. I mean, who expected the Rolling Stones to be running around? Who expected The Who to be at Madison Square Garden, two of them yelling out, "Hope I die before I get old"? At the age of what, 80?
Too late.
You know what I'm saying? Rock and roll and comics and... I mean, on one hand, I'm sort of like, it's embarrassing. And on the other hand, I'm saying, you know what? God bless them. Let them do what they want to want. There's still an audience for it. I might make fun of it, but I don't think anybody should stop. I don't think Marvel and DC should stop. I just stopped reading the comics. I've got friends at Marvel and DC. You know, I've got people who work on the books. I mean, it might sound like I don't, like, a, you know, like I'm bitter or something about... You know, I lost a book at DC that I was really excited to do. I was doing a Metal Men book, and Didio canned it, and it's not to his pace. And you know, but that's not why I have a problem with Marvel and DC. It's same, you know, the guy who comes in after him It's just a whole different, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. It's meet the new comic. Comics have painted themselves into this corner where they have to do bigger and bigger and crazier stunts. And part of our pop culture these days is instead of making just bigger and crazier stories, it's also bigger and crazier shock value, you know. And everybody think there's a lot of people who think it's you know, cool. There's a lot of people who like it. I mean, there's a lot of people who like it. I, what can I say? You know, don't like it. You know, I might be completely wrong. My tastes are my tastes. That's all. Yeah. But I'm, you know, the same way that I feel that I should be free to bitch about what I think is a shame and what I think is also diminishing returns in a business sense and bad publishing strategies that have been going on since the 80s and, you know, pretty much all have to do with the way the direct market's set up and the expectations of the direct market and the way the retailers respond to this stuff. I mean, what are you going to do? Television's gotten like this. Movies have been, actually, to be honest, I guess they have and they haven't. I mean, I remember the 80s movies were a hell of a lot more grotesque and fun than they are now. You know, every week, five new crazy horror movies came out that they couldn't make now.
Now they're doing the horror movies all over again, though. They seem to be back in
style.
Yeah,
they're less interesting. They're so much less interesting because they're trying so hard to replicate something or to be something, whereas those old movies had no budgets. Throwing millions and millions of dollars, even a low-budget horror movie nowadays could make you know, one smart director and a few smart screenwriters, or even just people who are just, you know, creative or talented, could make so many movies out of the how much one grudge movie costs. Horror movies shouldn't cost $40 million. They shouldn't have stars in it that you know, because you have expectations when you see a star that you know. You don't know what... whenever you see a real actor or actress in a horror movie, generally, you know they're going to make it to the end of the movie. Old horror movies, you watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre, whether you like it or not, or Halloween or things like that, you don't know who anybody is in those movies. You don't know who can die in what order. I mean, you don't know who your star necessarily is. But I miss all the 80s horror movies. They're pretty dead. Some of them are just so nuts. I think that's why people really got into the, a lot of people got into the Asian horror movies over the last few years.
Yeah.
Which they're remaking and adultifying and making boring.
Like, the world doesn't need exactly the Grudge 2 with Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Well, you know, they did well, but it did well. I know. I agree with you. I don't go to the movies. I steal everything. My friends steal everything. We watch it. you know, where you get a cheap DVD in Chinatown or something. But I like watching Korean and Asian and, you know, all the Asian, Japanese, Chinese, all the horror movies, because I have no idea what's going to happen, which is what's really good in a horror movie. I like the dreamlike quality. Sometimes they're illogical, they're a mess, they're stupid, but they're a mess and they're stupid in a way that the big, explosive horror movies that Hollywood's making aren't. You know, I watched The Ring remake, and The Ring is not a great film, the original, but it's got some moments that are absolutely terrifying. Sadako comes out of the TV, the actual video that they show on the videotape. Scary stuff, really. I mean, you know, to be scared when you're older is you know, no easy task. And you watch the American one, and they spend a good hour and a half with this bullshit mystery, and they have to explain everything, and they pull out the weirder elements because, you know, they take everything about it that made it interesting to enough people to make a remake, and they scrub it clean, and they make it interesting, you know, for 14-year-old mall poppers, which I guess is good business, but it's, you know, shitty for my enjoyment, and that's all I care about.
Yeah, well, have you ever thought about doing maybe a horror book someday?
About, anyway,
I think we started off talking about Bill and Ted. I don't know how this
and somehow we got here.
We never even talked about it.
Yeah.
I always tell you have to cut me off because I really talk way, way, way too much.
Well, to go with the Bill and Ted stuff, I mean...
Possibly.
Yeah, just quickly here, let's go Bill and Ted. Now, you worked on the Bogus Journey adaptation, and you worked on the excellent comic book. Were there any restrictions you were given?
Excellent. The title was, please qualify that.
Okay.
The title Bill and Ted. Was excellent comic book. Nobody's necessarily saying it was an excellent comic book.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay.
But were there any limitations that you were actually told from the movies themselves or anything like that?
No,
like,
whatever
don't do this to them?
I had on that, because nobody cared about that book. I mean, that was like the last gasp of the star line, and whatever fell out of that, shook out of that, was like the last gasp of Marvel really trying to do kids' books, Barbie and books like that, and Bill and Ted, Kid and Play, Garfield, Heathcliff. I think it was just Heathcliff. one of those unfunny orange cats. But they didn't care about the book. I got the book because really I don't think anybody really wanted to do it, and I mean, they did not have the top books like that. Traditionally, would get old timers who were on the way out, and people being nice to them, getting them work, and guys like me who, you know, would needed a job, and no, but it was not a plum assignment. I was not a Bill and Ted fan. I had not seen the movie. I still have not seen the first movie. I can draw, you know, characters that were similar to the Pirate Corps books that I was doing at the time for myself, you know, and draw lots of aliens and make, you know, music jokes and make fun of comics and just have a good time. And it turned out to be, I had a great time with it. I ended up becoming very, had a lot of affection for the characters and for the comic. And it was the only time I ever did a monthly. Of my, you know, pretty much of my own stuff. And it was really surprising. I was going to do it for only like 3 or 4 issues, but I had a great time. And Fabian Nicieza, the editor who gave me the job, he just let me run with it. I mean, nobody was paying attention as long as... I mean, I knew it was an all-ages book, and I did, you know, and I only got maybe 2 or 3 things cut out of the book, and that was all from the film people, not from Marvel.
Yeah.
Just some very, you know, nervous, you know, I mentioned Jews. Ooh, I made a Jewish joke.
Oi.
And, yeah, I couldn't even use the, but I'm Jewish. They just were afraid that mentioning religion was going to set the world on fire.
But that's one of the fun things about being Jewish. You can make fun of Jews.
Well, by Dork 11. Someone thrown at me in Williamsburg. But, there's really one really bad joke in there that I can't show it to my mother. She's really going to wonder why. And I don't want to tell her. It's because I grew up in a Jewish household. But, God, it really is bad. But anyway, Bill and Ted's, great experience. Best money I made for a very long time. I had medical coverage that year. Can't. People, you know, I've talked about it since we did the book collection to Slave Labor recently, you know, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, and so I did it, you know, I talked to people about it. People really seem surprised when I say that I enjoy working on it, and that I'm not, like, cynical or, you know, dismissive of it, but I don't take a job, even back then, unless I thought I could do it, or that there wasn't something about it that appealed to me in some way. And Marvel says, you want to write and pencil a book? You know, to a guy like, I was like, oh, yeah. I didn't think about it twice. I mean, I always wanted to work on things like Spider-Man growing up and whatnot, and I was hoping by the age of 30, my goal was by the age of 30 to be a fill-in penciler, which is what they used to have fill-in pencils. They don't really have, you know. Now everybody seems to be filling in, and everybody only does 2 issues, 4 issues, 3 issues, but then people stayed with books for years, and when they'd miss a deadline, they'd use a file story. They'd use a story out of the draw that somebody was paid to do, and I just wanted to be somebody who could even do that much. And then who knew the comics industry and the direct market would come around and change things to the point where you could do your own books, and you would think about doing your own books, and you have the opportunity to do your own books, because from the post Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle days, anybody could get into the industry who had enough, who could hold a pencil, as I've said, and it really seems to be kind of true.
Well, I'm kind of glad that we did actually have the, you know, the instance that other people would be able to just go in there and do their own books, because if not, you know, stuff like Dork would have never really happened.
Well, it's a real punk rock thing, and it has its good points and its bad. It's great that lots of people could do lots of different things, but there's also just a tremendous amount of garbage, you know, from myself included. I mean, my early work is not, you know, very good.
This, you know, oh, come on.
You know, what are you going to do? Right. Yeah, well. There's a lot of people in the industry who are embarrassed by their early work, and they really don't have a reason to be. And then there's people like me whose early work really is pretty bad. And no one is more amazed than me that I've been able to, you know, hopefully, you know, I know that I draw better than I used to, and I know I write better than I used to, which isn't saying, you know, I'm great or anything, but it's just, I mean, it's just, you can't compare it. But it's amazing that I was able to stick around and stuff. To be honest, the Bill and Ted's book was a great experience because it allowed me to do so much work in so short an amount of time that I had to learn. But, I mean, if you look at those things, I know nothing about how to draw clothes. I know, I mean, you know, a lot of people have the same faces. The girls are really sketchy.
Yeah.
It's basically going on energy. And again, like punk rock, a lot of what people are doing early in their careers is just attitude, style, energy, personality, and you just try to refine that. Or, you know, even, and if you keep the rough edges, I think that's fine. I think that's what, you know, I think that most of the people in the industry that people care about, who aren't working on major characters, and some who are, a lot of it is, you know, what do they bring to the work that comes through in every book they do? What is the voice and the personality? When I talk to people like SVA at my friend's class or something like that, Joey Cavalieri's class, the DC editor, who did my World's Funnest book and everything, you know, I always tell them, you know, I do not know how to tell anybody how to draw. I do not know how to teach people things, really. There are certain things you can break down, timing, composition. I'm terrible at it, but you can, you know, do a rudimentary breakdown of it. But you can't really teach people personality and voice. You just got to,
yep.
It comes through or it doesn't. And you can make it. I think that you can facilitate it, but you can't give anybody a voice and you can't give them a personality. There's a lot of people who do really great work, really terrific artists and writers, but you almost don't know. You know, you can't almost, it's almost like a McDonald's hamburger on some of these. You can't tell exactly who touched it and how. And then there are certain people who, whether they're working on, you know, if books had no credits anymore, you would see people's personalities in the books in a way that you didn't back in the 50s or, you know, earlier. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense, and that's also why I don't eat McDonald's, so there you go.
I pretty much cut it out of my life, I must say. I can't handle it. I worked there for 9 months. If I worked at McDonald's and didn't get sick of the food, then obviously I can't work in a comic. I will not work in a comic store and get sick of comics, no matter what happens.
Yeah.
If you can work at a McDonald's for 9 months and still eat that garbage, I mean, nothing short of somebody taking a dump in your mouth with the McDonald's logo on it is going to... Because that stuff is nasty.
We have some questions that were asked on our forums that I wanted to run by you here.
I'm glad to hear that.
All right, this first one is from Matthew Guy.
I think Superman would beat the Hulk. Does that answer everything? Can I go now?
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, Superman beat the Flash. That's what we wanted to know.
Yeah, and Thor and the Hulk. Let's not even get into that. But the first question he asks is, what is it like to win an Eisner Award? And then after that, he asked what the backstory for writing Superman and Batman World's Funnest was, and what was it like working with so many great artists like Alex Ross, Phil Jimenez, and so many others for this one shot.
Wow, he only has a couple of small questions that are all obviously yes or no answers.
Exactly.
How does it feel to win an Eisner?
Yes.
Yes.
What was the backstory in World's Funnest? Yes.
Yes.
And what was it like to work? No. Jesus Christ. That's all. To me, I could talk an hour and a half on that shit. What is it like to win an Eisner? I was drunk when I won my first Eisner, so I don't know. It's nice. It's really nice, I must say. I mean, I'm not going to be bullshit contrite about it. On the one hand, winning an Eisner means nothing. It really does. You don't all of a sudden get a call from your agent, as I said. You don't get, hey, the offers are pouring in, you won the Eisner. You know, you have your pick. What do you want to work on? All those humor books at DC and Marvel, the editors are just calling your phone. Your phone's burning. Your page rate's just gone up $30, you know? The world's at your feet. There are women at the door. They want to suck you off. You know what I mean? No, you know, there are men at the door. They want to suck you off. You know, nothing happened. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, nothing.
Whatever people are into.
Nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you two guys, what, 6 years now?
Oh!
Long distance is kind of tough, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're working on it.
My wife and I got together long distance, so why can't you two? It's a beautiful thing. The internet, you can just take pictures of each other and whatever.
I don't know what my girlfriend would think about that.
So, whatever. she didn't know you were a page?
Just taking a scary turn.
Oh, God. Anyway, about...
Let's get you guys off the hook here. Because we all know how down with homosexuality the mainstream comic book audience is.
Oh, exactly.
Hey, Batwoman's cute, she's allowed, but North Star can't have a boyfriend. Anyway.
And how many times now has Nordstrom been killed? But let's not get into that at all. But
I'll be honest. I know a general. I got a good general sense of what's going on the Hulk. I do not even know if that character. You know how I know who anybody's around anymore? I see the HeroClix figures on the counter at the comic shop, and I go, "Oh, yeah. That guy's around. Okay, I know who that is." I don't know who the hell the characters are anymore. There's no Speedy anymore. Once I realize they change the names, I don't know who the hell anybody is.
Yeah.
I just they'll all be back because they're all corporate logos and copyrights. They will all be back. Superman can't die. Steel can't die. They'll probably have to bring Blue Superman and Red Superman back. Because nobody can take them. Or they'll use them in the WB shows or whatever those things are now. Whoever runs them, because they can't lose even a costume or anything. So. They'll all be back. Even the Impossible Man and Batmite and all those guys have to keep coming back or else they'll lose them. So,
well, about Batmite. So anyway, Superman and Batman, world's funnest.
Winning an Eisner is wonderful because you know that a few people out there are reading your work and care about it enough to vote. It's at the same time, I don't really feel like I deserve most of the awards I've won in the industry. On one hand, I cherish them. On the other, they're a reminder of my feeling like an absolute phony because except for one or two instances where I feel like out of the five people up for it, I'm okay with it, with winning it, but I'm not okay with, beating out people people who I am a fan of, who I think are much better and more deserving. Like, Jaime Hernandez was up against me, and I won, and I was like, that's just ridiculous. At the same time, you got to realize that it's who voted, you know what I'm saying? Who didn't vote? It's like anything. Yeah. It's a popularity contest. I'm glad enough people like me in those instances. That being said, if I'm nominated for something, I'd like to win it rather than lose it. It's nicer to win than to lose.
Oh, yeah.
And the little plaques cover up the cracks in my wall.
That works,
and it's nice, but I don't agree with it. I mean, I'm happy to be acknowledged, but I don't want to sound like I'm making too much out of this, but I'm ambivalent about everything in the world. So
there you go.
I question things way too much, but I think
sometimes it's easier to be that.
And there are people who take it way too crazy. I mean, I've seen people who actually get like sick over it. Oh, I haven't been to the Eisners or been to San Diego in years, but I mean, there are people actually getting. And there was a couple of years where I've been the night before. I realized that I'm really worked up over this. This is crazy. You know, I know it doesn't mean anything, but at the same time, I'd like to win this stupid thing. So, awards are nuts. They're flawed. I'd rather win them than lose them. There you go.
Okay.
And it was nice when the Eisners had a lot. When 1 or 2 years I won it, I was there. You don't get a round of applause much in the world of comic books.
Yeah,
you really don't. You don't get much feedback, even though you'll get letters. But on the whole, you don't get it. It's not like performing. You sit in a room, and you draw these things by yourself. And sometimes you're working 18 hours a day. And there's worse jobs out there. But sometimes you just really feel it's a lonely job. I'm lucky that my wife shares the job with me on a lot of our things, so I have somebody to see during the day. some of these guys, you hear about in the past, or when I was a bachelor, to just sit in the house day in, day out, it's just really tough. And to go somewhere and have, a couple hundred people clap for you, whether they mean it or not, is heady. So, there you go. It's, it's great. It's terrible.
There we go.
It's great. It's useless. It's wonderful.
Okay. Now, Superman and Batman.
Same goes for the other. I've been lucky that I've won the Harvey a couple of times, and I've won one Ignatz, which was a total ripoff because it was for a category where I felt I had an unfair advantage. But I'd rather win it again. It's based on, you usually win for something you don't deserve it for. You usually win for you didn't get one. Just in the Academy Awards, a lot of people tend to think that people get it because they deserved it the year before or something like that. So the only book I ever worked on that I thought deserved any kind of mention, of course, lost when it was nominated. So I guess it did get a mention, so I shouldn't bitch.
There you go.
And what are you going to do? World's Funnest. Jesus. How do I do this quick? World's Funnest was just a gag I had. The idea that Batmite and Mixius could destroy the DC unit, have the power. The idea that these two characters, who are pretty much loathed by a lot of members of fandom, especially Batmite, these jokey characters are little retards with the powers of God. And I love that. I love that they're the most powerful things in the DC universe, more powerful than the Spectre, probably. Well, in my book, they are, and I guess they are. I mean, they're world creators. You know, they're these, basically they're these two moronic D&D dungeon masters who could do whatever the hell they want. And I decided to take it to the stupidest conclusion, which is that they just romp through the DC universe as a playground. And if they destroy their toys, they can just fix it the next day. And the joke was that they get into a war over their favorite heroes and end up, they get physical, they kill Superman and Batman, they continue to keep killing characters and destroying the universe until they reset everything at the end and go their separate ways and agree to meet the next week to do it all over again. And that every week the DC universe is destroyed, everyone's killed and dismembered and brought back to life without any knowledge of it. So, you know, on one level it's a Vertigo book, and on another level it's just a stupid joke book. The reason we ended up going with 18 chapters or sections was we couldn't agree. When I pitched it to Mike Carlin, and I was trying to get it going through, I think Joey, I talked to Joey about it. I can't remember exactly, but I do know that I spoke to Carlin about it at Dragon Con, and he said, okay, let's do it. And he started calling it the Mixie book, and he was like, what's going on with the Mixie book? And I was like, I can't figure out how to stage it. Do I do it using because of the difficulties with the DC universe, because it's like there's 50,000 versions of it, especially, you know, do I use the Silver Age characters? Do I use the animated version characters, which are kind of like the Silver Age characters? Do I use the Modern Age characters? Well, if I use the Modern Age, for lack of a better word, Mixius Pitalic exists, but Batmite doesn't. So I couldn't write it organically because I'd have to explain Batmite. But if he doesn't exist, you know what I'm saying? And this is where superhero comics just get crazy. When you start talking about these plots, you always have to. You have 70 years of backstory that you've got to explain. And the problem with World's Funnest is that it's just like these stories that I have a problem with. You don't understand it unless you know all the backstory, because we ended up using every single DC era that I could fit in there or was allowed to use. So eventually I said to Carlin, I was at a gallery opening for something, I think it was Alex Ross, and we went there before I went out to go drinking with friends of mine who had been reading Kingdom Come and really into it. And I really wanted to see Alex Ross's pencil stuff. I'm actually a bigger fan of his pencil and ink work than his paintings. Personally, I don't really like his comics so much as I like his preliminary drawings. Mm-hmm. But that's neither here nor there. But I was at the gallery. I don't want to apologize. I like looking at this stuff. Now that this, you know. But Carlin was asking what happened to it, and I said, I'm stuck. I wanted to use the animated versions because I thought that would make much more sense. And he said, and everybody told me that I can't because the animated stuff doesn't sell, which in and of itself is a crazy thing that, you know, millions of people are watching the shows, but you can't sell more than 15,000 comic books based on these hit shows. But anyway. Yeah. And I didn't want to use the modern era because it made no sense. The entire idea of the book doesn't work based on DC's get rid of all the funny elements of the comics. Batman doesn't know who Batmite is, then the book doesn't work. So he said, why not use both? And a light went off in my head, probably because I was looking forward to getting drunk. and I said, why don't I use all of them? And he said, what do you mean? I said, I'll use the Silver Age, and we'll do the animated, we'll do the modern, we'll do the Silver Age, Golden Age, why don't you let me use everything? And he said, sure, sounds good. And he turned around, and I left. And I spent the night writing on napkins, and then I started breaking the whole thing down, and I realized that what I wanted to do, the high concept, got really, I was very excited by it, because I realized if I was going to do every alternate crazy stupid Earth DC put out, and there's so many of them, I was going to try to get an artist that best represented each one. So because I was at the Alex Ross show, I thought I hadn't read Kingdom Come, but I knew about it from, you know, you could not know about it. I would see if I could get Alex Ross to do Kingdom Come, and I would see if I could get somebody do the animated version, somebody do the modern, blah, blah, blah. And I wrote down my pet artist that I'd like for it, and I tried to get, you know, and I ended up getting almost everybody I wanted. And first person I got was David Mazzucchelli, because he's a friend of mine. He agreed to do the Kirbyverse, for lack of a better word, the fourth world. And then I got Dave Gibbons to do the Silver Age, when he was going to be the backbone. And I was, once I got the two of them, I realized oh, I got those two, and I got Alex Ross. Alex agreed to do it, which was, you know, I was very nice of him, and very nice of everybody. I mean, everybody was just very appreciative. And when I had the three of them, I realized, shit, I've got Dave Gibbons, I've got Alex Ross, I've got David Mazzucchelli. Why don't I try to get Frank Miller? You know, I was getting, you know, I was like, why don't I have a Dark Knight section? That's an alternate world. And I remember yelling out, shit. And Sarah's like, what? I said, why don't I have Dark Knight in here? I mean, that would really break this open. And I got Frank Miller's email from Shrek. I knew Frank from arguing with him once and from talking to him a couple of other times. Not well. And he turned me down. And then he liked the way that I took it. And he said, okay, why not? Maybe I'll do Dark Knight someday. So, you know, maybe I'll do a Dark Knight sequel someday. You never know. Which turns out he did. So with those guys, I pretty much just, then I went after Jaime Hernandez for the, you know, blah, 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 make a long story short. I got I got 18 really, really interesting people. Some people dropped out, some people couldn't do it. Will Eisner turned us down. Mark Schultz turned us down. It took me 6 months to write, and I was very happy with the way it came out. I thought everybody did a great job. I don't think anybody's, if you know what I mean, I don't think anybody screwed it over. I don't think anybody dropped the ball just because they were, like, lending their name to the project and that was good enough. A lot of times you'll see top guys, you know, I'm not saying these guys, but I'm saying a lot of times you'll see people go, well, you know, I'm doing this as a favor, or, you know, I'm only doing two pages. I'm a very busy man, and, it's enough to have me just show up. But everybody pitched in. Everybody did amazing work, I thought, and I was... There was nothing I was disappointed with, and I got what I wanted out of the script, and nobody balked, and nobody, you know, whined, and there was a couple of weird, you know, things here and there, but I got more out of some people, and I ended up getting people like Bruce Timm, who initially turned me down, and he ended up pitching in, and it's pretty amazing. So I guess that answers both your last two questions. It was a great project.
Yeah.
I was only disappointed that it didn't, I really wanted it to sell better than it did. I wanted to do better by DC. And I wanted to do better by the people that were in it. I thought it was a good, funny project, and I think the problem is funny does not sell in the mainstream, and it doesn't sell much in the small press either. But I just don't know why a book with people like Frank Miller and Alex Ross and David Mazzucchelli and all those alternative guys and top guys, you know, all, you know, a lot of great guys in there, a lot of great people, and it just didn't do better. I really thought I don't know how DC feels about it. Maybe it did what they thought it would do, but I just thought that with some of these guys in there knocking out some beautiful artwork and with the high concept, that it should have done heftier numbers.
Yeah. You just got me asking the same question in my head, actually, because, well, I mean, with creators involved like that, I mean, how could you not have gold in your
head? I think it sold about 30 or so. I think it had good reorders the first week from what they told me. I mean, it wasn't because I wanted to get any money out of it. I wasn't going to get paid anything if it sold twice that, I think.
Yeah.
It's just, in some ways, it was my baby. I really shepherded that thing through. Joey did a ton of work. Joey Cavallari did a tremendous amount of work on that book. He had no assistant. He had, 18 artists and inkers. There were inkers on top. You know, we had Joe Giello with Stuart Immonen. I mean, we had a lot of people with a lot of hefty schedules, and that's not counting the people that he had to ask and the people I was asking. He got me, you know. I did a lot of work beyond, not patting myself on the back, but, it was a crazy book to put together. I had to do a lot of reference, a lot of research. I didn't know a lot of this stuff. I mean, I knew where to look. I mean, but I'm not that big. You know, I'm not Mark Waid, you know what I mean? Not knocking him. I had to look this stuff up. Find some of it. Sarah was helping me find all these worlds, all the stuff Ty Temple didn't have to draw. But it was to be able to work with some of these people who I was a major fan of, and that some of these people who were, who were direct market gods, you know, who could snuff me out with their feet. It was pretty, pretty exciting. To draw stuff for David, if I could have the original art of that splash page of Darkseid that David did, I would definitely burn churches and kill children. I would, I would definitely run through a temple with torches. But, I just, yell the pharaohs after me so they don't think I did it.
There you go.
But, That book, I would love to have a piece of original art from everybody on that book if I could. I'm, you know, it's a weird experience. It was a lot of work. I should have known at the time that you work on a comic book, and it's not the fault of the mainstream. A comic book comes out, and the next week it's done, except for a few, you know, glittering projects that people really love. And this just didn't seem to be one of them.
And it's a week-by-week business.
I'm sorry?
It's a week-by-week business, basically.
Yeah, I mean, generally. I mean, it wasn't a miniseries or anything like that. I mean, I think maybe I got myself, even though I'm very realistic and very cynical, maybe I got myself worked up a little bit thinking that I was, you know, going to ride in a big car with these 18 guys who all are more popular than I am, and that we were going to, you know, I didn't think I was riding on their shoulders or anything like that, but, you know, I thought maybe I was riding, you know, in the back somewhere. And I was just like, how could this miss as a project people would be talking about? And it almost felt like it didn't come out.
Wow.
I like it. Every once in a while, I've got Xeroxes of all the pencils and all the inks, the whole damn thing. You know, Joey was feeding me everything, and, you know, I'd come into the office every couple of weeks and we'd get together and work on stuff. And you know, Joey's also, you know, I always give him credit. He had, you know, he had the idea for the animated section. I couldn't figure out how to write that one. I didn't know what to make fun of, because I like the animated shows are well done. And the cliches of the animated shows aren't quite the same thing as the cliches of comics. And he came up with the idea of doing it, the concept of doing it as a storyboard, which just broke that one open. I thought it gave it a different look. It gave it a different effect. I think it's a cute book, but, you know. Also, it was $7. It's, you know, that's hefty.
Well, you know what? These days, that's not too bad.
You know, this is 5 years ago. 6 years ago. Oh, geez, that long ago? Wow, I used to have a career.
Shit. Oh,
wow,
man.
So let's talk about something else. I'm depressed.
All right.
You get wrapped up in these things. You really do. I think everybody does to some degree.
Well, we got a question from Chris Chavez on the forums, otherwise known as Equinox.
Equinox. What?
Sorry,
Chris.
Yeah.
Hey, what Chris, if, how you doing? This is one for me. Yeah, the big dog. Yeah, hey.
What, if any, did you find to be the hardest thing about making the transition from working in a printed medium to working in broadcast television? Do you find television to be a more or less collaborative medium than comics?
Well, obviously, it's more collaborative, unless I guess you're working on 52. The first stuff. Well, you know what? The odd thing is, the first things we worked on was Space Ghost Coast to Coast, and that just turns out to be the part of the Cartoon Network that became the Adult Swim, which is one of the more lenient and trusting people I've ever, you know, heard of in television. Mike Lazo and Keith Crawford and the people up there really seem to trust the writers. They pick people they want to work with, I guess. And I'm talking about, you know, I'm not... Mike told Sarah and I that he really liked that we... And he's the creator of the show, that he really liked the fact that when we wrote a script, and even if it was a script that needed work or they couldn't use eventually, that they felt that it was an entire package, that we didn't bring them something half-baked or unfinished, that, you know, it had... it didn't need to be explained. It didn't need work. It was all there. And I just think that's what you should do. I was surprised to hear that. And later, you know, to learn that there are people who turn scripts in that have, in comics, that have things like fight page, you know, fight scene for 3 pages. Go figure it out to the artist. I'm like, I don't think that's writing, personally. You know, I guess
Marvel Method. There you go.
Yeah, I can't work Marvel Method. I try it. I just don't. If I'm going to work Marvel Method, then the artist should be given co-writing credit, for Christ's sakes, number one. You should just be given plot and dialogue. You know, you're just loading bricks onto that guy's back. He's got enough to do. Maybe they
like it. How did you end up getting that first work on Space Coast, anyway?
Because of the Milk and Cheese. Somebody gave Mike Lazo a copy of the Milk and Cheese trade paperback. And he liked the comic. He liked Milk and Cheese, the characters, and he thought that the dialogue in the book would be something he thought that the way I wrote Milk and Cheese, he thought that I could write Zorak and Moltar. He felt that the characters needed some kind of banter that they weren't. They were still working out the show. They kind of knew what they wanted for Space Ghost. They knew what they were doing with the guests. And I think he specifically wrote in the letter that he contacted me describing the show, which I had actually already seen just a few weeks earlier and really liked it. I thought it would be the worst thing ever put on television when I heard about it. I just thought, this is the lowest depths. They're going to have Space Ghost on interviewing. And this is just the lowest depths of pop culture. They've just reached the bottom. They don't know what to do. I had no idea that they were going to have, you know, the reality shows and everything. He just said, I think that you can write for these characters. You want to try a script? And I tried a script, and Sarah worked on it when I was stuck in a couple of places because I'm not the best at structure, and I also have no confidence. And she, you know, her and the two of us together can do things that separately we can't. And they accepted the script. I went to Atlanta. I worked on the round table on it, and they showed me around, and Sarah and I were hired to do more scripts, and we worked on the show for a couple of years. And while we were doing that, Paul Dini tried to get me to work on Freakazoid, but everybody left the show before I could get my job on a particular script, and then they moved over to Superman, and he hired us for Superman, because he felt that, he knew we liked superheroes, but he felt that we didn't hug them so tightly that we squeezed the life out of them.
Is probably going to sound really stupid.
And that's how we got that. And that was just, you know, Paul liked, and again, we met Paul because of Milk and Cheese. He bought a page of artwork off of me in San Diego, and we got to talking, and we stayed in touch, and, you know, it was just, you know, not trying to kiss anybody's ass or be their pal, but it worked, you know. You know, we got along well with Paul, we got along with the people at the Cartoon Network, and we've, you know, stayed in touch, and it's just the weirdest thing. You know, who knew comics would get me and Sarah work in other, and now, and then we went a couple of years without any work because we don't really pursue it because I'm not very career minded and I'm terrified of interviews, agents and managers and stuff like that. I understand comics, television. I just don't know what the hell's going on, and illustration. We just, you know, basically I'm, you know, if the phone rings, I get a job. And I'm just lucky that the last few years have been rough, and this year has been really good, and we started doing some more TV stuff again.
Speaking of that, I was going to mention this.
I want to answer Chris's question real quick. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
It was the transition.
It
was writing, you know what I mean? I went to film school, first of all, so I understood certain things about the formatting and of a screenplay and this and that. And I understood that they were going to, I understand when I work for Marvel or DC that or Warner Brothers, the Cartoon Network, that they can do whatever they want. They can pull my scripts. It says it right in the contract. You know, if I don't own it, they can yank dialogue. They could yank scenes. They can ask for rewrites. That's fine. You know, I'll bitch about it and moan about it, and I won't necessarily agree with it. But very often, some of the changes are to the betterment of the script, and sometimes to the detriment. But everybody has a different opinion. When you're working for somebody who is paying you to entertain an audience, or to, you know, or whatnot, or, you know, it's a job, and there are different requirements than when you're working for yourself. Sometimes those it presents a challenge that creates good work, because you can't work blue. You can't do easy things like go for gore or violence. I mean, I like that stuff, but it's true. You know, very, very often a shock element is an easier way to do it. You know, going back to DC and Marvel, that's what I think. I mean, it's easier to rip people's arms off and kill off characters and reveal them to be evil after 20 years of being a pal than to write stories. You know, those are all stunts and constant climaxes and shock elements is always easier than writing a story. Superman was interesting, you know. We definitely got a lot of stuff cut out of our scripts and a lot of things taken and a lot of rewrites. And if you look at the credits on the Supergirl episode, we have co-credits on a few of them. And I think that, you know, I was a little bothered by that in some ways because I thought that we did the bulk of the work on some of it. But at the same time, those people did contribute.
Yeah.
And also, you know that a lot of your stuff's being changed by the storyboard artists, by the editors, the writers, the writing staff, if they sit down. I mean, the thing was Space Ghost and Eltingville, the Cartoon Network, the Adult Swim, have been amazing to work for. I hope I get to work with them more because it's unlike working with anyone else. They really, if they hire you, they figure you know what you're doing to some degree. And they really let you express yourself the way you want. The Eltingville script was barely touched, for good or bad. The Space Ghost scripts, a lot of them have gotten like 90% of the scripts aired. Most of the changes were just from ad-libs, from the voice actors, which was part of the process. But less ego and less politics and less people definitely helped on that, but also just a less easygoing, more trusting. They really seem to respect writers and creators there. I mean, if you look at the stuff that they run, there is a different sensibility there, I think, than a lot of other networks and different executives. They really seem to want. They seem to enjoy what they work on, and want to let people. You know, they don't want to pull it. I mean, you know, you read horror stories about a lot of people who go in there and just run screaming. And there are certain companies Sarah and I have shied away from dealing with, Nickelodeon and Disney, just from people who've told us their stories and just from some of the small amount of interaction we've had with those companies. We worked on something that Nickelodeon ended up picking up. We worked on a development on that, and when Nickelodeon took over more of it, and we just walked away from it because we could see the writing on the wall, but it was going to be a nightmare. But the transition wasn't much. It was just writing a different way. He's still writing visually for animation, and I can't really. I think the biggest difference was, it was surprising to get paychecks that supported us. You know, Marvel and DC, I can live off that certainly, but I never did enough work at any of the companies where it could support us. And
well, paychecks are a good thing.
Paychecks seem to be necessary in a capitalist society.
Yeah.
Next question.
Matt, you wanted to chime in?
I was a fan of Sarah's Action Girl book back in the 90s, and I think this is a stupid question because it's probably really obvious, but did she design that Supergirl costume?
No, it's okay. Not obvious. People have asked that about like how much. She had no input on the costume, but Sarah went out to L.A. and worked with them on the early stages of that two-part episode. Sarah was involved. I was not flying then, and she went out there and worked with Paul and a bunch of the people out there in L.A. And Paul and I had talked on the phone a whole bunch on the plot mechanics. And what we were developing, Warner Brothers came up with a lot of stuff. I think we came up with a decent amount of stuff. We wanted to work the Supergirl character a certain way. We wanted to make her pretty much not write her like, you know, everything was. We basically wanted to make sure she didn't do kicks and. You know what I'm saying? She didn't do the backdoor stuff on the Adam West show.
Yeah.
And we also didn't want to make a big deal of anything. We didn't want to really point out she's a girl and she can hit, and she's a girl and she can do this, and she's a girl and she can do math. You know, we wanted to just, you know, she was a super girl. And she had based a little bit on Sarah's principles that she was using for the Action Girl anthology, and just trying not to do anything preachy with the character for part. You know, we didn't want to make it here's cousin, here's a special message that girls are people too. And, you know, we just wanted to do some fun, good superhero stuff with her. But she did not work on the costume. I think that's all Bruce Timm, as far as I know.
Okay, I don't know. For some reason, I
don't know who else
may
have worked at Warner Brothers. But we had no input on any visual stuff.
Okay.
No.
All right.
Not a stupid question. Fair question.
Yeah, definitely. Because, yeah, I could sort of see the influences.
I think it's a swell costume, too. I always liked it. And, apparently... You know, DC liked it too. They ended up adopting it for a while, I guess.
Yeah. This one's from Damian Smith, otherwise known as Lord Shaper on the forums.
Why do you have to? Why do you have to? If you don't mind me, why do you have to give everybody their EverQuest name or something like that. What is that all about?
Well, these are their handles on the forums, just so that people who are listening know who we're talking about, because they might very well frequent the forums as well.
Okay, what forum is this, if you don't know?
This is the Comic Geek Speak forums. We have a forum on the Comic Geek Speak forums, and they're one of the biggest comic book podcasts out there, so... Okie dokie. Anywho.
What's that? Okay, okie dokie.
I don't know.
I wasn't going to say anything. I was like, okay, I believe you. And
okay.
So now, all right. Dragonheart said what?
Wahoo.
saving throw against sarcasm. I'm sorry.
That's
I'm
all right.
I know this.
No, I know, dude. I know.
I don't want Derek or who. What's his name?
Damien.
He lives in Australia, so you're pretty safe.
Yeah, Damien's straight out of Australia, so he's pretty. Yeah, he is.
Jeez. God bless
you. Well, his question is, did you think you made it when milk and cheese were rare cards in a superhero card game? The Wildstorm one, if you didn't know that. I thought a light question was needed.
No, I didn't know they were rare because I still have like 30 of them sitting around. I just send them out when if people write me letters or send me or buy artwork for me, I just throw them into an envelope with all their stuff. I had no idea they were rare. Whoops, there goes my kid's college thing.
I'm sure they're not that rare.
That and my Youngblood number one, that created Youngblood number one.
Oh, great, yeah.
I shouldn't have sent those away, but no.
Youngblood number one, I think, is 1 cent now, 2 cents?
No, I had no idea that I made it because of that. I've never felt like I made it. I mean, I sort of felt, you know, when we got the TV work, I felt like. But the thing is, I'm a very cynical person, and I just expected that to be it. We'll do one episode, or we'll fail right there, and then we got more, and then I'm waiting for it to fail. The problem is that I'm so busy waiting for stuff to fail that I never enjoy myself. So, on the one hand, I know that I'm successful because I'm doing this full-time, and to me that's... I think that you're successful in comics if you just do good comics, personally, even if you don't make any money. But, I mean, I'm professionally successful because I haven't had to go back to working, washing dishes, or working a comic store, or working a bar. But I've always felt like this, my career could just end tomorrow, you know, and, I've always wondered what the hell I'm going to do if, I don't even know why I'm off on this tangent, but you know, no, I've never felt like I've made it. I never felt like a big shot or anything like that. I mean, or even, I guess I felt like a little shot a few times, you know, but. No, the card thing was just a nice thing that happened. It was just good, you know, it was neat that somebody asked. You know, I'm just excited. So I'm still, you know, if somebody asked me to be in a comic or to do a job, I mean, we just did our first book cover for, well, we did a book cover many years ago, but it's the first time we did a book cover for a book we had nothing, we were not contributing to or doing anything from HarperCollins. And that, you know, it's just, you know, it's a big deal to me, you know. Almost everything's a big deal to me. Any job I get, you know, I save a copy, put it downstairs in a box, I'm definitely more jaded than I used to be and more tired. Because if I had gotten some of the work that I've done in the last year, just in the last year, getting into Mad Magazine, doing a few jobs for Mad in the last 2 years, I think that if that happened when I was younger, or even just 10 years ago, I think I would have been like, you know, a dog rolling in shit. I would have just been, holy crap, I read this when I was 10. How the hell did I get into Mad? I'm in the usual gang of idiots for a little while. You know, I'm an idiot, you know, rolling shit. And I'm still excited by that. And I'm still terrified when I meet other cartoonists whose work I like. And I'm still a fan, you know, even for all my bluster. But you know, anything that any time, you know, anybody wants to do an interview with me, I'm just like a scratch. I'm like, well, that's neat, you know. But somebody would want to talk. You know, people don't want to talk to my mother. I don't want to talk to my mother. Yeah. You know?
Well, if she was around, I'm sure we could probably have her on. But if not,
oh no, we don't want that. I don't want that. No, please don't. I think her handle is.
Death. Lady Deathblow.
No, we don't want my mom around.
Okay. Oh, God. Well, speaking of handles, we got another question here. This one's from Chris Chavez, otherwise known as Equinox on the forums. How do you keep your...
the question. I remember Equinox.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's back.
Crazy sheriff who turns into a bat. You ever seen that?
No, I didn't, actually.
Wild. Wow. It's a low-budget stop motion monster fest. The movie's crazy.
How about that?
Well, how about that? Why are you being fucking? Now you're pissing me off. You're being disgusting with my movie.
Oh no.
My Equinox,
He doesn't know any better.
I don't know any better, exactly.
You know who's in this? Frank Bonner is in this movie.
Oh, okay.
What does that mean to you?
I've heard the name before. I've heard the name before. I just can't place it in my head.
He's the guy. He's in the second Star Wars film.
Okay.
No, he's not. You see, once again, you're just saying okay. He's not. He's not. He never has been. He's from WKRP in Cincinnati.
I know who he is. There we go.
No,
all right.
You don't,
then. WKRP in Cincinnati. I have watched many a time, actually. So
what,
I just
from the womb.
on reruns on Nick at Night and on TV Land. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Next time you see this guy, punch him.
I have not yet seen him, but I will one of these days.
Well, you still haven't seen him?
No, never.
That is.
Yeah, he's in Milwaukee, man.
Are you?
Yes.
That is a long distance relationship.
Exactly.
Milwaukee. There's a lot of beer in those towns.
That's true.
The man from the band of beer
in Milwaukee.
God, do I miss beer?
the question from Chris, by the way, is...
Oh, I hope it's about beer.
It's not, but you might enjoy this one. How do you keep your art so zany? That sounds like it could be a bad thing, but quite the opposite. I really do love the feeling of fun and irrelevance that I get when enjoying your books.
Could you just ask the first part of that again? I want to hear that one more fucking time.
How do you keep your art so zany?
Oh my God. How do you keep your art so zany? It kind of sounds like, how do you keep your child so ugly? I'm kidding. I mean, even he knows that sounds weird. Zany is usually used for unfunny old movies. That's why it kills me, because like, the Ritz brothers are always zany, which means not funny. You know? That's why I hate when they call Marx Brothers movies zany, because I think they're funny. So don't call them.
Soup is brilliant.
I agree.
Yes.
There's a short answer from me. I can do short answers. Wheeler and Woolsey, zany. Zany antics. That's when you have zany antics, turn the fucking TV off if it says zany antics anywhere in the guide. Oh, my God. And they also, any movie where they call them the boys?
Yeah.
Did you ever notice that? No.
Usually when they call a comedy team the boys...
Uh-huh. It's because there's a female and male romantic lead that have taken over much of the plot because the boys, Laurel and Hardy, or the Marx Brothers, or Abigail, are too old to be funny on their own, and they have to be called the boys, which is really sad. It's like, oh, the boys are, you know, and it's usually a very haggard stand. A Laurel and Hardy walk in, and they can't, like, hit each other anymore. Okay, how do I keep my art so zany? I just think zany thoughts while I'm drawing. And smoke a lot of opium. I don't fucking want to keep my art zany. I've never thought of my art as zany. Cluttered. I think I know what he's saying, though, but, you know, it's probably just from my influences of, you know, Mad Magazine and, cartoons as a kid. You know, you just try to draw. You know, I've developed a humor style that I try to make all my characters look really... I guess my characters don't sit still a lot, I guess. The El Pingo characters, Milk and Cheese, I mean, they're usually screaming a lot. And I just try to put a lot of energy into those kinds of characters, the ones who are erupting all the time or freaking... I don't know how I do it. How do I do it?
It's magic.
Ask Chris how I do it. How does he think I do it? I don't drink coffee. I don't get drunk when I draw. I don't do cocaine anymore. I stopped yesterday. I think I'm going to start again tomorrow.
I picked a really bad day to stop sniffing glue, that's all.
If I could find my dealer. Holy Christ, my comic dealer or my Coke dealer? I went, all right.
Oh,
there have been a couple of comic shops that sold. Well, I know of one. Well, whatever. I didn't know them personally. This is a front for a Coke ring. And I don't
the world's remember. Best wow. comic shop right there.
They probably have. Yeah. They're probably doing better than, you know. Very much. Why is that shop open till 3 in the morning? I don't get it. The only shop I've ever seen girls walk into.
Oh, ow.
What's the matter?
Eat.
From Brooklyn to Milwaukee to Staten Island.
Oh.
Next question from Xenon.
I hope it's not from Chris again.
Now this one's from Matthew Kramer. He's actually got two questions in a row.
His handle is
Darth Kramer.
Jesus Christ. How did he get keep his handle so zany?
Well, oh, God. See, now I'm going to have to stop myself from cracking up. All right.
I hate when people laugh at my work.
Oh, man. Being primarily known for humor comics, and see, that's a great question to ask, a lot of your work in the Dork series has been a more serious tone. At some point in the future, would you like to get a chance to do some more serious work? Why do we always hurt the ones we love? Banjo, banjo, banjo. I'm uncertain why that last part is there.
That's a Space Ghost quote from an episode we didn't work on, but I appreciate it anyway. It always happens. It's really fun. At a convention, Sarah and I would be sitting there like schmucks, like everybody behind the table, feeling like a moron. Because, you know, even if you're having a good con, you can't escape the feeling that you're sitting in the dunk tank at a carnival and that everybody's just milling about wanting to see you fall in water, throw shit at you.
Yeah.
You just feel really stupid behind those tables. And, people will come up and go, oh, we love Space Ghost. Oh, we didn't know you worked on Space Ghost. We love Space Ghost. And they'll go, did you write the episode with Banjo? No, we didn't work on that one. But, oh, did you do the one with this guy? No, we didn't work on that one. Oh, but we love the show. Did you do, and you know, they can go through 80 episodes and not hit one that we did. And they'll go, well, which one did you write? And it always seems to be the same goddamn thing. And I go, well, we worked on the one with so-and-so. And I'll go, oh, we really love the show. And then they leave the table really fast.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, holy shit.
Nice talking to you. Hey, look, that guy's over there. See you later.
We should just, like, say, yes, we worked on that one.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Which one did you do? Which one did you like? Oh, we like the one where Lokar eats a hoagie. Oh, yeah, we did that one. Actually, maybe I'll write that down. We'll do that one for the game tab.
There you go.
Lokar eats a hoagie. yeah, I will probably do more other... You know, the thing is, I don't have to wait to do serious stuff in Dork. It's just, do I want to or not? Dork's my book. I can do whatever I want. It's just that it's really only issue 7 where it got serious, for lack of a better word. I think the themes were more serious, but it's still a joke book, and there's lots of jokes on every page. It was just happened to be about, you know, how awful I was doing at the time emotionally and psychologically. But I still put it out as a book with gags. It was just at my expense. And, if I want to do anything serious, I would do it in an issue of Dork or do it in just another book. But right now, I'm putting out less comics, and nothing I'm working on is serious. I mean, I'm doing stories with Jill Thompson for Dark Horse, one a year for the last couple of years, and we're hoping to do some more stories next year with these stories about these dogs and a cat that live in this in suburbia. In the Northeast, and deal with the supernatural that have been invading their neighborhood. And there's humor in them, but they're mostly serious. And, you know, the Thing stories I did was serious. I mean, I've done some, you know, for lack of a better word, serious, non-humor stuff. It's just, like anything else, it's if the mood takes me and if I have a story. But lately I haven't. You know, I hope to be alive for enough years that, like, you know, maybe I will do something. But generally, I like doing humor work, and that's what I'm doing.
Well, most people hope that they're alive.
And that's a direct answer to your question.
I'm personally hoping for some more Fisher-Price Theater, but I think that's probably a long gone.
You know I don't like doing those?
Oh, you don't?
Because I got to read a book.
Oh.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, I'm a high school English teacher, and so that was, like, you know... To have the little one-page summary of, or two pages of...
Well, and you know better than anybody. Nobody likes reading a book.
Well, yeah, according to the kids I have, that is true.
Yeah,
exactly.
I hate reading those books. They're long. I don't have pictures in them.
It's the Cliff Notes or the...
I use the Cliff Notes on one of the ones that I did because I just did not feel like going back and reading. I didn't have time to read. I had read Of Mice and Men like 3-4 times at that point. Probably because I didn't get it the first 3 or 4 times. But when it came time to do the strip and I knew I wanted to do Of Mice and Men, I just wanted to jog my memory on certain scenes. And, I don't think it was Of Mice and Men. Jeez, which one? Oh, I don't remember. It might have been... No, it wasn't Catching. Holy crap. Maybe I didn't use Cliff Notes. I don't know. I still want to do a few of those. I want to do Animal Farm really bad. Because I could draw the barn animals that everybody grew up with.
I would like to see that.
I would like to see that, too. You know how you can see that? Send me $2,000 and I will work on that strip.
Our own commission. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Use a commission for these things. I mean, you know, I don't get... I really... Well, let's not get into that.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, the TV stuff, when it happens and the illustration pays for something like Dork to get done. I mean, Dork makes more money than some people make in comics, but it's, you know, everybody who works in small press comics knows you really don't make, unless you're in a rarefied group of people, you know, maybe 20 people who can really make a living. They've got it down to a system, or they're just they're good enough or popular enough or lucky enough or smart enough. They can make a living off this small press comic alone. I'm not good enough, popular enough, or smart enough. And I can't keep to a schedule to put out a monthly or anything like that. If I put out Dork 20 times a year, I could probably live off that. I could. You know? And
well, that seems easy.
That would be like, and I we don't feed the kid. A lot. Often. Sometimes. And, you know, we start selling things. Something like that. I don't know. If I did it 100 times a year, I'd be very happy. And dead.
Well,
I'm not going to put out 100 years, 20 issues in a lifetime of this book.
Oh, man.
So, speaking of other TV properties, the latest thing that I saw your name attached to
TV
was...
TV property? Yeah, what'd you see my name attached to?
The Shin-Chan cartoon.
Huh?
The Shin-Chan cartoon on Adult Swim.
Are you asking me or telling me, high school guy?
Well, I said I saw it there, so I guess
I know
it
you're
must
in Milwaukee, so I can talk tough, because otherwise, if you were in Brooklyn, I'd be saying yes.
Well, sir. I was watching
I'm
the show,
kidding.
And
Shin-Chan,
I was.
Yeah, Sarah and I worked on the Shin-Chan translation on the Americanized version of Crayon Shin-Chan, a long running. Show in Japan that I think it's still running.
Yeah, I was just surprised. I tuned in, watched one of the first episodes, and I was just surprised to see you guys' names showing up at the end of that.
Why,
I read on your blog
we got
page.
Work.
No, it's just yeah. You know, it's just sort of like unexpected, I guess. Not in a bad way, but no, I'd read on your post. You said that you just kind of punched up the scripts. Basically, is that what you're working on?
We smacked them around a little. Yeah.
Show him who's boss.
What? What did you just say?
So you showed him who's boss?
Oh, I thought you said something in Yiddish.
Oh. No, I'm not Jewish.
But it helped.
The Jews have you outnumbered today, man.
Yeah, that's true. Doesn't it feel like we own everything?
Oh, yeah.
You conspiracy-laden bastard.
There aren't really too many of you out here in the Midwest.
The thing that's funny about, well, because look at the place. We wouldn't be called dead there. What are you nuts? Look at the schools. Forget about
exactly.
It. Milwaukee. You brutes. You anti-Semites. You brutes.
Well, Milwaukee was founded by German settlers, so there you go.
Nazi brutes.
Exactly.
You know what's crazy about anti-Semites? If they really thought we ruled the world, why would they open their mouths so much? We'd fucking snuff them.
You got a point there.
The few times I've heard anybody espouse and, you know, say stuff, you know, about Jews, I wish that I was just a big monster, you know, like a WWE wrestler, and I could walk over them and go, you know, we'll be in touch. Because it's like, how could you? The oppressors, the vile oppressors, the bastards own everything. Hey, what happened to Harry? You know, the Jew hater. He never came into work the next day. He's gone. Disappeared. You know, we just have a fucking island for those bastards. But guess
See,
what?
That's why somebody needs to make the property Jews on steroids.
Oh, yeah. If the Jews do own everything, I wish they'd send me the goddamn handshake because I want in. You know, where's my piece of the Kugel? I can say it. I don't know how to spell it, though. My grandmother used to make it.
Oh, me neither.
I
hey, Kugel's delicious.
We
yeah.
just did a strip. Well, that's good. We just did. I should make Kugel for a living instead of comic book. We just did a strip for Bongo for the Simpsons holiday special. They asked us to do a Krusty the Clown Hanukkah strip. And it was really embarrassing because I had to look up everything on the internet about being a Jew. I didn't know. How many days is Hanukkah? I don't know. How do you spell Jew? I don't know. Did we... What Holocaust? What? I don't know. Terrible. I don't know anything. It's like we were somewhere and I saw that there was like a... I was reading something that there was a Boston Holocaust Museum or something. I was like, they killed Jews in Boston too during the war. I don't understand this. Why are there Holocaust museums anywhere? I've never heard about that.
It's lesser known, but Boston Holocaust.
Yeah, that means there definitely was a Staten Island Holocaust Museum, because, do they not love the Jews on Staten Island? Jews don't love the Jews on Staten Island. They're telling each other to move. Hirschfield, get out of here. Get out of here now before I call some boys. Some boys from the Dotton to take you out. Oh, God, anyway.
Man, your comedy's just too East Coast for me to deal with you.
I'm sorry?
So your comedy's just getting a little too East Coast for me to deal with.
You just killed everything.
That's it. Anyway, on that note, yeah, back to what Matt mentioned about the about 20 minutes ago.
This is what you get. This is what you get. You call somebody like me up. This is what you get. You get East Coast drivel.
That's fine with me.
Sure, because you're full of East Coast drivel.
Exactly.
And Kugel. Drivel does sound like it should be something that your grandmother made, doesn't it? Yeah, have some drivel. Eat your drivel.
Yeah, right up there with the Kugel and the potato latkes.
That's good stuff. Mm. I do like the Eastern European food, man. I do like the heavy, heavy starch. I mean, I like everything.
Oh.
I can eat. I like
eating. Now you're making me hungry at 12:36 in the evening.
And that's exactly what I planned. Not a minute sooner, not a minute later.
There you go.
My devious plan. Shin-Chan was, oddly enough, was something that we had brought to the Cartoon Network's attention. Years ago, Sarah had made tapes for our producer Keith Crawford on Space Ghost, because we just thought he'd get a kick out of them. Some fans had sent us some subtitled episodes of the show. We had seen the character in a comic that we had picked up at Kinokuniya Bookstore on the cheap, as we Jews say. And I don't know how we came about. I don't know how we got these tapes. I don't know if we were put out the word that we were looking for them, or somebody just sent them to us. People used to send us stuff when we were like during the 90s. And we sent Keith this, and he loved it, and he wanted to try to get it picked up for the, he wanted to look, have it looked at by the network. And it turned out that a company had bought the rights to Crayon Shin-Chan, did an American version, and it was a bomb. Nobody liked it. I think it was a company named Fun, FHUN. I can't remember. I actually read about this recently. I didn't know this. And the project just died. The property sat, and then Funimation, who brought Dragon Ball over recently, more recently picked it up when the rights came up again, I guess, or reverted, or when it became available. And they contacted, I don't know what happened here, but all I know is we got a call from, I guess it was from Funimation. We got an email saying that they were trying to get the Adult Swim to pick this up or something like that. They were in talks. And the people at the Cartoon Network basically said, they suggested to them that they hire some rewriters for the property. And they suggested, they proposed Sarah. They put our names up, and they put someone else's name up at the network. And we got chosen, and we did a script. And they liked it, and we did eight episodes, and basically some writers in Texas, I think they're in Texas, that Funimation had put on the job, they did drafts, and we just did revisions on them. We punched up dialogue, we chose material or didn't choose, or junk material, rewrote some stuff, and everything had to be written to, we tried to keep them on the mouth flap beats, which was how many syllables each character saying when their mouths are shown flapping. It was a weird experience as far as that, but we got used to it pretty quick. And Sarah's done a bunch of rewrites on manga. She's done rewrites on Tokyo Pop, eight titles. So she's had experience working on this sort of thing. We don't speak Japanese, but Sarah's become pretty good at sussing out cultural things that need to be addressed. She's good at editing, she's good at logic, we write dialogue, and it turned out to be kind of a small dream job. We liked the character, we had fun working on the show. Some of it we found really difficult, and some of it was pretty easy, and we got six episodes got shown pretty quickly after we finished up our last bit of work. and sent the stuff in. There's rumors that we're going to work on some more stuff in it this month for the show. So, which is great.
Were you guys responsible for most of those like pop cultural references, or was that?
I don't know. To be honest, you'd have to give me an episode, and a lot of the stuff that's in the shows was not written by us. It might have been rewritten slightly. It might have been left alone. But you know, there's a bunch of writers on each episode, and you know, there'll be stuff that we put in, and then a lot of stuff they put in that we, you know, we seem to have been the last people to get in. To get on each episode, I'm sure that they tweak them when they get them back, but a lot of the stuff seems to have been run as we rework them. Or, you know, sometimes we're just editing. What it feels like we're doing is really script editing, you know, and script doctoring comes into it a lot, but sometimes we're just really reworking material we've got, and sometimes we're coming up with stuff on our own. It's weird. We've never done anything quite like that before. I feel weird rewriting other people's work because I feel like they're sitting there. I know how I would feel, you know.
Who are these guys?
Who does this guy think he is? Or you know, who they think they are? They think they're, you know, East Coast putzes get to come in here, right? You know, but you know, plenty of there. I'm sure everything that's in the show that people like is probably there is the way things go for us. That's the Space Ghost episode. Oh, we love that joke. Well, we didn't write that one. And I love this line. I think that we just rearranged two words on that one. But the thing is, whatever happens, is that Funimation seems happy. People seem to... It got a really nice response, from what I understand, on the test trial. It was just weird to work on something, and then it just was on TV weeks later. It's very odd. And we were very happy. I was very excited because it's, you know, we hadn't done anything since Eltingville for television. So it was just really weird to go from no, you know, dead TV animation career to working on the pilot for Tyrone's Inferno, the show that I'm developing, Sarah and I are doing, and having Shin-Chan actually on the air to be like our, I don't know, fifth project that we worked on that got on the air, which is not bad for not having a manager and agent and just putzing around and not knowing what the hell I'm doing. So,
well, oh, and by the way, the name of the company that did the first one around is, it's Fuse Entertainment, otherwise known as PHUUZ Entertainment Incorporated.
It doesn't even sound nice it sounds bad when you spell it.
Yeah, I know.
It just sounds like a chemical disorder or something. It's something you pull people into in environmental suits to get rid of. PHUZZ is in my
house. I'm sorry, you have Fuse.
Yeah, well, I guess you're looking this stuff up on the internet.
Yes.
You want to do me a favor and check some of my eBay auctions while you're doing
it? I think I'll leave that to you.
That's a joke. I don't have any. I was just kidding. I don't want you looking at my eBay auctions. I have to give you my pass. What, are you nutty?
Not over Comic Timing.
Zany,
no. If you want to do that off the air. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah,
I'm absolutely zany.
What's with the zaniness?
I try.
Chris who said that I was zany?
Yeah.
I think Chris is nutty. No. Thank you, Chris. I don't want to insult my... Yes, I did.
We got one more from Matthew Kramer, actually. One more question.
Oh, he's Galactus Kramer or something? Or?
Darth Kramer, actually.
Darth Kramer.
So, there you go. A lot of sources have credited your Pirate Corps / Hectic Planet series as having... Yeah, I did it by accident. Core.
That's why I changed
that over.
Name, because people.
Yeah, let me say that over.
Well, you're only 22. You can edit that out to make yourself look smart, aren't you?
Exactly.
Holy shit, that's not fair.
A lot of sources have credited your Pirate Corps / Hectic Planet series as having a hand in the 1990s ska revival. What are your thoughts on this statement? Does it have any merit? Pirate Corps was very ska-licious. I don't know exactly what ska-licious is, but did it really breathe new life into the ska genre, in your opinion?
No. No.
That was quick.
I think they may have gotten a few people to look at to buy some ska records or pique some curiosity and pique some interest in a few individuals, you know, maybe two dozen in the comic book industry. But no, I think ska was just something that I was a molecule. You know, I had nothing to do with it. I've actually seen that written somewhere, and I just thought, no, that's ridiculous. That would be like saying a ska band that I did work for had something to do with comics getting in the New York Times, you know, 20 years later. It's just ska, you know, ska's time had come to be pushed. during the, you know, the alternative years of radio. And it was just a genre that nobody had, scraped out and exploited and used. And it got its turn, and it just so happened that I had been into it, and people in comics remembered that. So, you know, I wish I could take some credit for it and a small check. But, no, I just happened to be, you know, I like punk and new wave. I like ska. I wrote about ska in my comics, and nobody would say that I helped, you know, in the punk revival, or that anybody in comics helped in the punk revival. But ska is just such, ska was still such a ephemeral thing, and still is, I guess. In some ways, ska was like the comic, you know, ska was to mute punk. Ska was to popular music what comics are to popular literature, I guess. And I don't think anybody expected to hear the word on the radio or on MTV. So I just think that something would help. My God, that stupid ska stuff with the people in the suits. I remember a comic that had that in it. I wonder if that had, no, nothing. Zip. I worked for a bunch of bands and things like that. But I was not a big person on the scene or anything. I just happened to be, I guess, the only person in comics that was regularly talking about ska, and most people didn't want me to. And they still wish I didn't, probably, but, you know. Nope.
Ah, well. All right, well, that's...
Are you upset?
Nah, just a little bit.
I'm very
just
sorry. A little bit. But, you know, it's okay. I have it's been okay. really I'll pushing survive. The klezmer music.
Oh!
So I think that we're gonna, you know, once you see the klezmer revival, that one I will take a lot of... the blame for.
Wow, I'm gonna have to go get me some Klezmer records right now, just to party down and
get some Klezmatic stuff. And if they do control the Kishka, so much the better.
Oh my God, my Jewish brain is going to explode.
Milwaukee's not too bad. That's a great song, by the way. Great song, Frankie Yankovic. I'm not kidding. Get the Frankie Yankovic version. There are other good ones. Brave Combo does one. Who Stole the Kishka is a great. You want me to start saying it? Who stole the Kishka? I'm not gonna.
Well, before we do wrap things up here, give us a little bit of an idea of what's upcoming for Evan Dorkin. What should we expect to see on the stand soon?
Hold on 1 second. I thought I heard my baby crying, but it was just something on the computer. Dork 11 will be out on the 11th, October 11th.
What a coincidence.
Not really.
Mind-blowing.
Oh, yeah.
Let's hope.
Now, this issue is supposed... It's like a couple hundred gag single panels?
Yeah, it's shit. You don't need it. Yeah, exactly.
No, that's...
Yeah. This issue is just some crap. Sure, yeah.
But no, I mean, is that the format that you... Because that's just from looking at the information on your blog page, it seemed to be what you were... what it was made up of. I was just curious if that was true or not.
Well, I put out a different feed to Milwaukee.
Oh, okay.
It's the one that has no Yiddish in it.
Okay,
and we
good.
Appreciate it, too.
I think, I think you meant that, buddy.
Oh. Ooh.
Edit that part out where you just cursed me. It sounded like something got leaked out there, actually. It's like, fucking kike. Oh, bleep.
Oh, man, come on.
Don't call me that.
Now.
Call me Kike. There's no reason to say fucking on the air, okay?
Man, you're getting me in trouble here.
No, you didn't call me Heeb. I did.
Heeb. Wow.
Heeb, my brother. But, please, let's not piss off everybody now. Everybody's so sensitive.
I think that's the mission of this episode, actually. Let's just piss off everybody in the world.
Okay. We start with you.
Piss off.
You have to piss off. I'll take a card. Hold on. You must piss off the Bolivians.
Those fucking Bolivians not listening to this podcast. What the hell were they doing?
Coke. Here we go.
Brilliant. There we go. Fantastic.
Matt,
what's
Matt, you have to pick off. Piss off. Pick off. What is this, baseball? Guy on first. Oh, man. I really should have more soda tonight. Let's see. Who could you piss off?
Canada.
Should we get... Fuck that.
That's
Canada's
too easy.
Just piss off Canada. Canada. It's, just call it America's Closet and be done with it. That's my oft-used... I use that on every blog. Every internet interview I do. Canada is our closet. No, I don't know. You can the Inuit. You piss off the Inuits.
Fucking Inuits and their seal blubber. I'm telling you.
Yeah, just fucking Inuits. Just a fucking
there
Inuit.
We go.
Come on. Fucking Inuits. What are they doing?
You know, well, they're up there with their seal blubber and talking their own little.
Wow, you're really
vanishing language.
It's scaring me now. Okay, man. Hey, hold on. My sister's Inuit. Leave it. Cut it out. It's not funny now because you're getting.
If there are any Inuits listening to this episode, my question is, why are you listening to this episode? You're Inuit.
Yeah, now let's piss off the Luddites and the the Amish. Everybody thinks that they don't have technology, but they do.
No. Let's not talk about the Amish. It's a bad time for the Amish right now. So
what are you talking about? It's a bad time. It's a bad time for certain Amish. It was not an attack on Amish. It was an attack on women on girls, which is horrible enough.
I know.
I mean, not to get all.
Yeah.
It was just amazing to hear that and just to go, how do people really think that there still is, like, no reason to discuss issues of gender? Because it's like, how often do one of these psycho bastards go into a place and say, okay, all the women get out, I'm just keeping the men?
Yeah.
Or I'm going to, you know, the one that sexually assaulted all the girls before he shot one of them last week?
Hey.
You don't hear, I know, it's true. You know, the context, you don't even want to get into a serious conversation about something, but... You just feel, I mean, Christ, you just feel like I'm so useless when you hear about stuff like this. It's just, cut all this out because I hate this.
Quick, say something funny.
This is why people like superhero comics before things turn so cynical, because you wish that somebody could come in and solve problems like this that are just absolutely beyond you.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Lunatics in the world, but...
Well.
Well, what are you going to do? Anyway, fucking Inuits. They don't make it any easier on us.
I saw them with those guys.
God. I'm so done.
Right. That's it. We have officially got into territory I didn't think we were going to go. Dork 11
is coming out. And in November, what the hell do I have coming out? Jesus Christ, sorry. I forgot about this stuff.
It's okay.
I'm a really good promoter of my own work. Let's see. I'll look at the board here because it's got some of the stuff I clipped to remind me. The Simpsons, I don't even want to say this out loud because it sounds zany. The Simpsons Winter Wingding number one.
That is totally zany.
Now, I love the guys at Bongo, honestly. They're very good to me. But Wingding. I can't, you know what I mean? Do you want to go into the store and say, do you have the Simpsons Winter
Wingding?
I'd run out before I could get it. It'd be like asking a girl out when I was, you know, gotta go. Sorry. It just make my bladder full to say Wingding in front of people. Well, the Simpsons Winter Wingding, I just said it again and I just pissed myself. Number one comes out in November. And that's 40, according to this, 48 pages. And here's something you don't see much. Full color. They can afford it. And that's by, I don't know who, I can't pronounce that. Paul Dini apparently is in this.
Okay.
And
that's the Krusty story?
Yeah, and they left Sarah's name out of it because everybody hates girls because they're icky. And and they smell funny. And they don't like Captain America much.
Huh.
They don't. How many girls go around with tattoos of Captain America? I've never seen one, have you?
I win. I think you just got your points back.
Oh my god, I win. So that comes out and
just under the buzzer.
That's got a nine page Krusty Hanukkah story, which I'm kinda happy with that one. I think it came out pretty funny, and I hope I'm not wrong, but there's some really kinda depressing stuff in there. It's about his worst Hanukkah ever. Sarah came up with the idea for that one, and we fleshed it out, and it was supposed to be 8 pages, but we screwed up and made 9 and didn't even know it. So I don't know if they're talking to me anymore, because I haven't heard from them since they pointed that out. I felt like really, like, bad. We weren't trying to squeeze an extra page out of them. We just numbered one page twice and never caught it, which is really stupid, but that's the house of fun. So that's coming out, and we got a milk and cheese vinyl figure set, hopefully coming out by the end of the year. Slave Labor is doing that, and they look really good. I want to plug the guy, Mitch, right? Mitch Martinez sculpted them, and they look like the characters, which is scary because I never designed them. They're barely designed for 2 dimensions, so it's scary to see them in 3. And we saw the sculpts, and we got the reductions on them, and they're being made in China by, you know, people you know, who work cheaper than Americans. What a horrible world. And, well, they're probably happy to have the work. What are you going to do, steal the work away from them?
That's true.
I don't know. What, you know, let me justify this so I can sleep at night. And then that should be out by the end of the year. And then, geez, I should do this faster. I know. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Oh, wait, here's my... Oh, I should just look at my deadlines that I've blown, and that will tell me what I am going to be putting out. Hopefully we'll have more episodes of Shin-Chan might be out. Who the hell knows? There's two more that are in the can, as they say, that have not been aired. And I'm doing some strips for a comic called Dose, which is a guy locally is doing a humor anthology. I'm doing a milk and cheese strip for him and a fun page strip for him. I'm still doing some strips for Negative Burn, the anthology that came back from the dead that Joe Pruitt's doing for Image, for himself through Image. And I've been doing some milk and cheese strips for him, and I'm supposed to do a two-pager for an issue. I guess that'll be out early next year. Sorry, that's not this year. And November, December should be the Dark Horse Book of Monsters.
Okay.
I have a 20-page script that Jill Thompson painted that looks really beautiful. She did an absolutely stunning job on it. And that's the fourth story that I've done for Dark Horse with the supernatural fighting cats and dogs. It's better than it sounds, I hope.
Well, I haven't heard of that before, but I'm actually intrigued because
really?
I'm a big fan of her scary godmother stuff.
Oh, her stuff, Jill's stuff's great. Jill's a friend of ours, and I've always loved her work, and I was really happy to finally, you know, I always wanted her to be the artist on this project. It was an 8-page story that we did that I wrote for the Dark Horse Book of Hauntings 4 years ago. They've done one of these books every year. There's Hauntings, Witchcraft, The Dead, and each one's been anchored by a Mike Mignola Hellboy story, which so far have not been reprinted. They're only in these books. And then these neat little hardcover books with, you know, about 20-some-odd creators working on maybe 10 stories in each. And an old pulp story that's illustrated by Gary Gianni. I mean, they're beautiful little books. They're really sweet. And I was really happy that Scott Alley asked me to be in the first one. I came up with the idea of, it was all about haunted houses, and I came up with the idea of a haunted dog house, and I wrote a story about it with these characters, and people liked them. So for the next one, he asked me back, and I asked if I could do another story, and we did a 12-pager, and then we did a 16-pager, and now we're doing a 20-pager. So you can kind of see where this is going.
Yeah.
And we actually, speaking of Eisners, just to sound like I'm a big shot, we've won 2 Eisners for these stories for Dark Horse.
Great.
Jill won one, and then we won one for a story, which I think, Jill deserved it. Let's put it that way. I don't know if I did. And she does. I honestly, if you have got a good store near you that stocks this stuff, you know, I'm not saying go run out and buy it, but, you know, go run out and read them in the store, because... I think the books are worth picking up. I really do. But I love these stories. I really do. They're some of the things I'm proudest of. Probably because I can distance myself from them because I love the art since I didn't draw it. And Scott was trying to get me to draw them, and I just, like, I can't draw this stuff. I mean, it would take me forever to even do the job 1/8 as well as I knew Jill to do it. I just wanted her to do it her storybook style. And I was writing them as sort of storybooks. And the stories are actually... They've got a lot of humor in them, but they seem to get very depressing, and I don't know why that keeps happening.
But I don't know. Well, sounds interesting, though, definitely.
Well, yeah, it's about these neighborhood dogs who and this one stray cat who become more and more involved with recognizing that there are weird things happening in their neighborhood, and it ends up being left to them to deal with it, because the menace or the situation usually involves an animal in some form. In the first one, it's the ghost of a dog. The second one, it's an army of familiars, of black cat familiars, for a group of witches swarm into the town. And the humans, the people who live in the town, are too busy to notice any of these things are happening, so it keeps being left up to these animals. And I've just been developing, it's sort of like a mix of Kolchak the Night Stalker and Watership Down, I guess, or, you know, with some
humor. I'm sold.
Sounds good.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, anthologies don't sell that great, and people haven't noticed these books. And this is going to be the last one. I don't think they've done terribly, but, you know, they're not, you know, you guys seem to know my work a little bit, and you don't We've done three of these now, and you don't even know they existed, I guess. But
I'll be heading over to Hanley's in the city to see if I can find them.
They should have them. If they don't have them, the Staten Island store could probably send them over to you. They've got them, and they could always reorder them. But I really love them, and the hope is, and what we're discussing doing, is doing a new series and then collecting everything. But it would obviously take a while because it's now been... This will be the fourth one, so that's like 4 years, and then it'll take us a while to get any more stories done. Jill's really, really, really busy, and I'm really, really busy, but we're hoping that we can... I have more stories with these characters, and I'd really love to flesh this stuff out and develop it. And it's just interesting to do something that doesn't look like my work and doesn't read like my work necessarily. It's tempered. It's not based on, you know, slapstick. I mean, there's some goofy stuff in it. You know, they're dogs, after all, you know.
Yeah.
They're sniffing each other once in a while and running after things and getting knocked around. But they're, you know, they're really, they are horror stories, first and foremost, you know. So, and I like the horror genre a lot. I've never been able to work on horror stuff, so this is exciting for me. And plus, I don't have to draw all that stuff.
Well, that's a good way to change things up.
No, it is. You know, it's been really interesting to do this stuff. And Sarah actually pitched in on the script of the last one, because we were kicking the main idea around the werewolf story, and Jill did just a beautiful job on it. Everything, it's all full painted in watercolors, and unlike a lot of painted comics, it flows as comics. It's not images first jumbled together with the words connecting them, because a lot of people who do painted comics seem to really just make all these little paintings that don't necessarily work as great comics or even good comics. There's always somebody narrating these comics, it seems, to tie it all together, because it's just a jumble of images. But Jill really understands cartooning and storytelling in a way that some painters don't, so I normally don't like painted comics, but I like hers because I think they're cartooning and they're done as comics.
Oh, great.
They just happen to be painted, so, yeah, anyway.
Yeah. All right, like excellent. I mean, I'm
going to finish Milk and Cheese 8, hopefully, for next year, and then someday finish the Elpingville Club stories up. And some other crap. Or I'll get by a fucking car. I don't know.
Well, we're just hoping that that doesn't happen. But I do need to say here before we do actually wrap things up that it's been really nice having you on the show, Evan. And I'm a fan of your work.
Thank you.
I will definitely be picking stuff up in the future. And hey, I mean, again, thanks for joining us, man.
Well, thanks for you guys for having me. And I hope I wasn't too obnoxious. And I hope I wasn't too boring.
I certainly don't think you were either one, so I definitely think that the fans will enjoy this nice 2.5 hours of conversation here.
All three of them. Read my work on your forum. Thank you, Chris.
Yep.
And thank you, Darren.
Lord Shaper Darth Kramer.
Darth Kramer. Thank you four guys. You're the zaniest.
Well... Buddy, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for joining us. And
thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I hope to talk to you sometime in the future.
Sure. Who knows? Right. I might have to get my job at Hanley's back one day.
Yeah, who knows?
Rubble.
Who knows, man?
Yep.
Well, we hope it doesn't come to that. But
Who knows? I would try not to be an obnoxious person behind the counter like I used to.
Well, from one Jew to another, shalom, my friend.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All right.
Take care. Mazel
well, have a good night, Evan.
You too. Take care, guys.
Yeah. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye. All right. Well, there you have it. There is our interview with Evan Dorkin, and I could certainly say that worked out pretty well there, Matt. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. It started out kind of rough, but he's kind of a prickly pear, as they say.
Exactly. Well, there'll be plenty of comedy moments in this one for everybody, so I hope everybody enjoys it as much as we
man.
Did. Because. that was definitely a lot of fun, and we'll have episode 20 again. This is episode 21, episode 20. I know it's a bit confusing, but I didn't want to rob Steve Bryan of being our episode 20. He'll be on next week with episode 20, and that should be a lot of fun also. And it looks like Damian Smith will be joining us for that also, who is Lord Shaper on the forums, and he'll be doing his next Rogues Gallery on that episode. So we'll have a chock full of everything on that episode, and it should be plenty of fun. So hope you guys join us for that. And before we do finish things up, Matt, give us a little taste of what's upcoming on That's What She Said.
Well, this week, episode 3, we have the coup where Angela tries to push Dwight to take Michael's job, and it should be out sometime this weekend. Now, unfortunately, I don't have my co-host with me this week, so I'm not really sure what I'm going to do. I might have to have you step in.
Oh, you mean you're going to have Ian fill in for Ian?
Yeah, maybe. That would be kind of mind-blowing, wouldn't it?
Wow, you'll be creating a Crisis on Infinite Earths there, buddy.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know.
And that can be found at?
Either search on iTunes, or you can go to the blog page at thatswhatshesaid.libsyn.com.
Excellent. And for fans of GeekSpeak, you're probably wondering where the hell GeekSpeak is, and so am I, because I'm trying to think of what I'm going to do with the show, because I don't want to end it, but I also know that in the format it's in, I'm not going to be able to do that weekly anymore. So there will be news upcoming on GeekSpeak. I have a feeling it's probably going to go monthly, or either that or just a shorter format, as opposed to an hour episode every single week. I'll let you guys know what's going to happen. I'll let you know on the thread on the forums, and I might even do an actual mock episode of GeekSpeak at speakgeekspeak.com sometime in the future. But just letting you know, GeekSpeak's not dead. It's just sort of in hiatus right now because I've been focusing on Comic Timing and focusing on getting a job, and those two are higher up on my list right
now. It's not dead. It's just in a coma with a feeding tube down its throat.
Exactly, and I'm not going to pull the plug like some person in Florida did once upon a time. But
ooh, topical.
Oh, and most people are thinking, like, when the hell did that happen? Because that was ages ago now.
But, dude, I got to get the hell out of here.
Exactly.
3 hours, man. I got to go to bed.
Well, let's wrap it up here then. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at comicgeekspeak.com/forum, graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Don't forget to vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links will be in the show notes and on the main page. Please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. That would be graciously appreciated. And a reminder that our 22 Pages number 2 will be coming up in about 2 weeks into November. It will be Superman Confidential number 1 by Darwin Cook and Tim Sale / Sale, depending on how you want to pronounce it. And we will be having guests on that, and we'll be announcing that probably next week as to exactly what day it's going to be and who will be on. So that should be plenty
of fun. Who pronounced that as Sale?
I've heard other people pronounce it as Sally before. I have no idea why. I think it's Tim Sale.
I've never heard of it anything else but Sale, so I don't know. Maybe we're wrong, but
I don't know. But nevertheless, Matt, it's been a pleasure, man, and thanks for hanging in there for 3 hours.
Oh, man, I gotta go. He gave me a work over. I gotta get out of here.
Yeah, well, for Evan Dorkin and for Matt, I'm Ian Levinstein, reminding everybody that there's always time for comics.
What kind of green? This is a shitty green room you have here. I have to provide my own water.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. You know, well, it's called the internet, man. I don't know.
Last podcast, I did send me champagne.
Really?
Actually, yeah, they did.
Oh my god.
No, they didn't.
I am Mr. Gullible.
Is this are we recording now?
I just actually started up the recording, but we're not actually in the episode yet, obviously. So, you know, I'll count down.
You don't
all
mind
that
if
once
I play a few tunes on my harmonica during this? Because that's what I like to do.
Oh, really? Well,
no, I'm completely wrong.
Oh man,
I don't like to do that at all. Actually.
Oh god. Well,
I'm wondering if you let me.
Okay, by all means, if you want to. What the hell? I'm sure it'll be entertaining to our listeners.
Yep. You're the marquee guest here, man. So.
What? What was that French crap you just laid on me?
Well, you're on the top of the marquee there, my friend.
Yeah.
Oui, oui, oui. Oh, God.
Okay.